Hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Liz Brown is out ill today, so we will bring you the best of the wake-up call for your listening pleasure. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Tonight.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome, welcome to Mondays at 9. This is, of course, Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454-6609. Is my fax, and if you want to toll-free long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways you need to get up, you need to get to me. This Monday's at 9. We will be talking to one of the producers, directors of the documentary The Lost Boys of Sudan, John Schneck, joining us from San Francisco. And we hopefully will have Peter Dute, one of the orphans of the Sudan, who made the journey to America. As many of you know, in August, I traveled to the Sudan to find out about what was going on in Sudan. So I am looking, very much looking forward to talking to Peter Dute about that. But first, let me get to John Schneck, one of the producers and directors of the documentary The Lost Boys of Sudan, joining us from San Francisco. John, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. John, The Lost Boys of Sudan. Can you give us a synopsis of what led you to make this movie?
Sure. In early in the year 2001, Megan Mylan and I started reading about this incredible story that was happening where the U.S. refugee program had endeavored to bring about 4,000 quote-unquote lost boys of Sudan who were orphans from the ongoing civil war in Sudan, living in a refugee camp in Kenya, to the United States as part of the U.S. refugee program. And essentially they were doing what the refugee program does every year, but with a very unusual group of refugees, these lost boys who were orphaned in the late 1980s during extreme flare-ups in the war there, had been living in a refugee camp for many, many years, and essentially had grown up, and they are now teenagers and young men, and without families. And the reason they were classified as refugees with a high priority to be resettled is that really very few of them had any family left. Their families had been killed in the war, and they literally had been orphaned and left to wander around the desert. And the UN had taken them to refugee camps, but they were still had very unstable lives. And so we heard about this story through some newspaper accounts, and it just felt like an incredible opportunity to follow what was clearly just an incredible human drama, and also a story that would allow us to really take an in-depth look at all kinds of issues that range from, you know, obviously raising awareness of the civil war in Sudan, but also watching an outsider look at America through completely different eyes than we're used to looking at it. And so we really jumped on the story right away, and very quickly we started the film.
Now, in your research, you discovered that, there were about 3,800 Sudanese children that were brought here to the United States?
Yeah, well, at that time, several hundred had, you know, when we first heard about the story, there had been several hundred, maybe up to about 1,000 who had been resettled.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that there was going to be, you know, many more, because they had, like you said, they had identified about 3,800 lost boys and very few girls to come over.
And why is that? Why was there such a difficult time in locating young girls to bring over?
Well, it's a complicated story that actually starts with the battles that orphaned these guys originally in the late 80s in Sudan. Most of these guys are from the Dinka tribe, which is a cattle herding culture in Africa.
And what is their religious affiliation? Do you know?
Mostly Christian.
Okay.
Mostly Christian and animist. And the part of the culture that these guys are from is that the young boys often go live in cattle camps to take care of the herds, and they live away from their families. And so when the soldiers would arrive in these villages, often they would kill the families, and the boys would come back at a later time and find that they were alone. And that's why, to begin with, there were few girls, because the girls either ran with their families or were killed with their families, and the boys were then orphans.
And when we talk about the boys, we're talking about just that, boys. Where were the fathers, where were the men of the villages?
Well, the men were either fighting in the war,
mm-hmm.
you know, part of the Sudanese People's Liberation Army, or they were killed by the northern soldiers who came into these towns, or they were running away because they knew that they could be either conscripted or targeted.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of factors conspiring against members of the community in these villages, and the boys, just kind of through sheer luck about by the way that they happened to live their lives, were often saved because they were away taking care of the farms and the cattle when a lot of these battles occurred.
So how did our government, or the UN, I'm sorry, make the decision of where the young boys were going to be, or where the boys were going to be placed? What states were targeted and why?
Well, what happens is the U.S. refugee program looks around the world every year at some 14 to 15 million refugees that live in the world at any given time. And they they essentially ask themselves who deserves to be resettled the most. And obviously, it's a terrible question to ask.
It's an awful question.
Because only about 40 to 50,000 people get resettled of those millions and millions of people in the United States. And the United States has by far the largest refugee program of any country in the world. So really, very percentage-wise, it's very few people. And essentially, they ask, well, who is in most danger of returning home? Who is truly somebody who cannot return home without fear of death or fear of infliction of some kind of pain? And they go and they do thorough interview processes.
Do they also consider what an individual has to return home to?
Sure. I mean, they say, okay, here's a group of teenage boys. If they were to go home to Sudan, what would happen to them? Well, for number one, there's a war going on there, so the danger is just as great as it was today as it was 20 years ago. B, do they have any family to go home to? And that question in particular with the Lost Boys was just a very stark answer, no. I mean, they really did not have anybody left in their hometowns.
So they made the decision based upon those factors. What's the next decision-making factor?
So the next decision is, where are these guys going to be resettled? And you had asked, you know, how does that work? And the State Department of the U.S. government actually works with about 10 resettlement agencies in the United States that actually are contracted by the government to do the social work of getting these guys settled into their new homes. And these agencies are all over the country.
And what factors do they look at, John, to decide, okay, we're going to take this group of Cambodian refugees and we're going to settle them here. We're going to take this group of Bosnian refugees and settle them here. We're going to take this group of African, black African, Sudanese and settle them over here. What are some of the factors that they look at?
Well, I mean, when there's a number of factors. Some part of it is just a numbers game. I mean, you know, if you're the Catholic Charities Organization in St. Louis or in San Jose, California, or one of these places, you go to a meeting every week and you say, okay, we have 20 spots in homes and apartments that we have in our city, so we can take those people. And then it's also a matter of trying to match people with cousins and friends and family who might live in cities already in the United States. So it's kind of a complicated, sort of matching game that the agencies play every week to try to get these people resettled all over the country. And they do get resettled in a number of different places. And most states in the union have Lost Boys living in them. And all states in the union obviously have refugees living there.
So do you have any idea of where the largest number of these young men that came from Sudan, where they're being resettled?
Oh,
because
yeah.
Here in St. Louis we have thousands and thousands and thousands of Bosnians that have been resettled
uh-huh.
here in St. Louis. Were there that large a group of the Sudanese boys that were settled in one place? Or?
No, I mean, there were only, you know, about 4,000 total Lost mm-hmm. Boys who came over to the
okay.
U.S. It was a large group, but it wasn't thousands and it wasn't endless.
Okay.
And so the most the city has, a place like Phoenix has about 160.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta, Georgia, Chicago, San Diego, California, Fargo, North Dakota, Boston has several. They range from, you know, some cities like Burlington, Vermont might have a dozen. Phoenix has over 100. So it's a range, but generally they're placed in cities, you know, with other small groups, in-group homes. There were a number of Lost Boys who were under the age of 18, and that qualified them to live in foster care situations, where in places like Grand Rapids, Michigan, and smaller towns where families would actually take these guys in, and they would live in homes with people and go to school.
And what's the age range of these young men as they were when they were brought here to the United States, the oldest to the youngest?
They range. I mean, one kind of interesting thing about this group is they don't know their exact ages. They were kind of arbitrarily given ages when they arrived at the refugee camp in Africa, but they range in age from, I'd say, about 15 to 23 or 24, and the younger. The younger kids would be placed in school, and then the older ones would really be essentially given an apartment for a couple of months and given a, you know, sort of helped to find a low-paying job, and they were really on their own very quickly, as you see in the film. It's just incredibly difficult almost from the very beginning for these guys.
And also that there was a problem with the arbitrary decision of how old these young men were.
Sure. I mean, these guys are an incredible story of redemption. I mean, they had been living in this refugee camp in Kenya, which you have to picture as just this not a particularly pleasant place to live, where there's local strife, there's tribal strife. It's a very large camp. And they had been going to school there. They had been, essentially saw themselves as students. Their elders in the camp, a few of them that did survive, had really kind of beaten into them the sense of, you know, you must get educated. This is your only way that you're going to make your way out of this situation. And they had really taken that to heart. And they're strong believers in education. And, you know, they get over here and they realize it's not going to be easy. They have to, you know, work these $6-7 an hour jobs at night, and then without knowing the language at first, they had to, you know, make their way and to figure out the incredibly complicated logistics of even finding a school, and then much less finding the money and the scholarships and all that kind of thing to get in. It was very difficult.
And then even the mystery of their ages, because if they were a certain age, then they could go to school.
Exactly. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, they saw themselves as school age, and then this arbitrary idea that, you know, when you come to this country when you're under 18, okay, you go to high school, but if you're over 18, which a great deal of them were, then they did not have that opportunity given to them. They had to really work hard for it. And by now, fast forward several years, a number of them are in community colleges and in universities. So there is starting to be a silver lining to the story. But for years and years, these guys struggled were kind of an incredible sort of cold glass of water in the face to them, because they really thought they were coming to the U.S. for education.
So, and the other piece of it is not simply the fact that they thought they were coming here for education, and then all of the extraordinary, sometimes arbitrary, often arbitrary roadblocks that were put up to keep them from education. There's culture shock as well. Everything from the weather to race to economic differences. They had to, and then the language barriers as well.
Yeah, I mean, you have to imagine. I mean, it sounds like some kind of crazy cliche, but there is truth in the fact that they literally kind of step out of, one day they're living literally in mud huts in Africa. No electricity, no plumbing, very little access to the outside world, very little sense of modernity at all. And they get on a 747.
But they're also living with African people that look like them as well.
Yeah, they're living essentially kind of in a version of what their villages in Sudan would look like, which they replicated in these camps, mm-hmm. living with, you know, many people around them and you know, going to school and going about essentially kind of a tribal life.
Mm-hmm. Everywhere they look, for the most part, they see people that look like them.
Exactly.
As well.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, they go from living with either extended family or friends that they had been living with since the trauma of being separated from their family. And they end up in the story that we follow in Houston, Texas, essentially kind of in a, you know, in kind of not so great part of town of Houston, Texas, and they're put in these apartments, you know, where three or four or five people of them live together, and they suddenly find themselves faced with what just seems like a endless jigsaw puzzle of logistical problems, you know, from everything from turning on the stove and figuring out how, you know, things in the home work, to trying to get to jobs that are sometimes 2 or 3 hours from their home by public transportation.
And we're going to have to let that be a stopping point, John. We've got to take a break here. And when we come back, I'd like to continue that, as well as get to the conversation of picking the two young men that you picked to represent the Lost Boys of Sudan. I'm talking to one of the producers, directors of the documentary, The Lost Boys of Sudan, John Schneck, who is joining us from San Francisco. My name is Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. We need to take a traffic break. I'll be right with you shortly. Stay with us.
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today. She should be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., so we'll bring you more of the best of the wake-up call as the morning continues right here on AM 920 WGNU. Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. 44 at Antire, there's an overturned vehicle reportedly in the median. Use caution as you roll up there. Westbound 64 at 157 over on the Illinois side. There's a reported accident slowing down traffic through 159. Eastbound 70 at K and 79, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 is slowing on either side of 44. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270, you can expect some delays there. Eastbound 40 between Timberlake Manor and 270, look for no delays. Westbound 270 from 367 through New Florissant, look for everything to be on the move. Westbound 270 at Illinois 3 and the Canal Bridge, look for slow traffic. Westbound 5570 is slowing at the mid-span all the way into the downtown area. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is looking good from the Illinois Bank through Laclede's Landing. And State Route 21 at State Route Y, there's an accident reported in front of the Walmart. Northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Everybody's rolling up on that ramp just fine into the traffic this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. Holiday shopping got you crazed? Subway Restaurants can help with the Subway Cash Card. It's convenient and reloadable. Get one today. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thanksgiving Day. For today, mostly sunny, high in the upper 50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the mid-30s. For Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high around 60. Wednesday evening, mostly clear. Once again, low in the upper 30s. Then on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, mostly sunny with a high around 60. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 34 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 30, both under clear skies. Liz Brown is out ill today, so we will bring you more of the best of the wake-up call. So stay tuned for that following these commercials, and we'll look at the top of the hour news, traffic, and weather, as well as more of the best of the wake-up call in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Radio Mix. Hola, nota. Radio Mix. Nuevo concepto. In Radio. La música que te gusta. El torneo que te encanta. Por la nueva de San Luis. Con todos los éxitos del momento. Todos los domingos. De 6 a 8 de la noche. Radio Mix. Por el 920 AM. Por el 920 AM. Escucha a través de la red electrónica. En internet. WGNU.net. Todos los domingos. De 6 a 8.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920. WGNU discusses the issues that matter most to you every day. And if you have a relationship problem with a friend, coworker, or family member, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in every Monday through Friday afternoon from 2 until 4 and take on the day with me, Dr. Laura, on AM 920 WGNU.
Hello, St. Louis. This is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson.
We're your hosts for The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m.
That's right. Tune in and you'll hear thought-provoking conversations and maybe something that'll make you mad.
Yeah, thought-provoking if they're listening to me. They'll get mad if they're listening to you.
Just the same, we'll see you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
4 to 5 p.m.
The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Hello, I'm John Womack. I have a new show on WGNU called On the Table. Some of the things we'll talk about will be restaurants, food and wine trends, recipes, but really, we're just trying to help you experience great food and wine, whether you're at home or out on the town. So if you love great food and wine, you'll love On the Table. Be listening every Tuesday at noon here on WGNU.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
We now continue with more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today, so we will bring you more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. I'm talking to John Schneck, one of the producers, directors of the documentary The Lost Boys of Sudan, joining us from San Francisco. John, welcome back.
Thank you.
When we went out on our break, you were talking about where the two young men from your documentary ended up being placed and some of the culture shock that they were going through when they were placed there.
Right, yes. The culture shock had really two stages. There was an initial kind of almost comical aspect to it, when I say comical, it was comical both to watch, but it's also it was sort of funny to them. I mean, they one kind of thing that people say and realize about these guys when you first meet them is that they're just incredible people. They have very warm, open hearts. They go about life in this very charming kind of amused way, and they're really not afraid of sort of laughing at their own situation and making light of what is. I think for many people, just an incredibly painful situation where they're really faced with a large version of what we all face when we leave home and face a foreign place, which is, you know, how do you just go about your day? How do you eat? How do you live? How do you get to work? How do you communicate? How do you use this thing called a telephone?
And who do you talk to?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you bring up an incredibly important point, which is, when Megan and I first started thinking about this idea, we kind of imagined filming conversations eventually between the Lost Boys and native-born Americans that they would meet once they arrived here. And it really did not happen so quickly. It was incredible to us that these guys arrived on our shores and were soon working in our factories and going to our schools and almost had this sort of invisible quality. People did not approach them on the street and very rarely talked to them. And
were you surprised by that?
We were surprised by it, and we had one incredibly poignant day with Santino, one of our characters, who is just a lovely person, and we came to really grow close to. And one day he turned to us. This was about 6 months into filming, and he said, "You know, I have two American friends." We said, "Oh, great! You know, who are they? We want to film you with them. We want to meet them. We want to talk to them." He said, "Well, actually, they're you guys. They're you and Megan and John," and we just wanted to cry. We thought, you know, after 6 months, we were the only people that were checking in on him daily. He felt like we were the only ones that were kind of true Americans who were, you know, born and raised here who cared about their story.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that just, you know, while we were proud to be part of his life like that, we were also incredibly saddened by that.
So tell us about the two characters that make up the Lost Boys of Sudan.
Well, we decided in the refugee camp, when we were filming there in the refugee camp, we decided to film a couple of young men. And one of them is named Santino Chuar, and the other is named Peter Condut.
And those are their names. Those are their African names.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have what they call their Christian names, which are Santino and Peter, and what they call their Dinka names. Santino's name is Majok, so his name is Santino Majok Chuar, and Peter's Dinka name is actually Dang, Peter Dang. Most in American kind of situations at school and at work, they think it's easier to be called by Santino and Peter, so that's what we've sort of referred to them as in the film.
Mm-hmm.
We had an opportunity when we were over there filming to meet about 100 or so of the Lost Boys who were coming over on the flight that we had been scheduled to return on to the United States. And we raced around this camp in our four-wheel drive vehicle with the help of the UN and met a number of these guys, and there was just something about Santino and Peter when we met them. Peter, as you see in the film, he's got a very kind of intense look about him. He's obviously has kind of a go-getter attitude, and we just liked him right away. He seemed very curious about who we were and what we were doing. Santino was very different. He was very philosophical. He's almost like artist or a philosopher's kind of personality, very gentle. He looked at me in the eye, and he told me that someday he wanted to come to California and learn the ways of my tribe.
Mm.
And I just felt like this is somebody that I really could see spending a great deal of time with, and that was really kind of the basic question that we had to ask ourselves is, you know, essentially we were kind of shopping, so to speak, for not only for somebody who would be a character in our film, but for a friend and eventually a family member, because we became very close to these guys.
Did you know what kind of story that you wanted to tell when you prior to your meeting Peter and Santino? And was that the story that was ended up told?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you make do any kind of nonfiction storytelling, you go into it with a certain set of preconceptions, and you're almost begging for those things to be replaced by the actual reality of the situation. And there were certain things that came true, and there were others that weren't. I mean, we really felt like, kind of from a Western point of view, that we really felt like we were going to be filming a lot of psychological problems. We kind of envisioned the post-traumatic stress story where these guys had been, you know, escaped from a war and were going to still be dealing with it. And we found that really not to be the case. They had really, it had been many years since the...
It was about 10 years or so that they had spent in
the... Exactly. They had been in this camp for 10 years. And they really had, through the almost sheer willpower and through kind of peer-to-peer support, which they provided for each other, proven to themselves and to the world that there is an alternative way of dealing with, the horrors of war. And we learned a lot from them in this way, and that they just simply support each other no matter what, and they are there for each other as brothers. And it's really an incredible thing to watch, and they're very physical with each other, with touching and hugging. And
well, when I was in Sudan over the summer, and I was also in Ghana, and one of the things that I saw exchange between the African men, I saw them holding hands.
Yeah, exactly.
That they are very comfortable with affection and being close to other people.
Yeah, it's a lesson we could all learn, and you see them actually when they get to the States very quickly they learn that it's not quote unquote cool to hold hands with other men.
Mm-hmm.
and they talk about how they have this really kind of amusing conversation that they're kind of laughing at along with the viewer in the film about how if you hold hands that means you're gay in America and you can't do that in public, and one of the guys says no, I'm going to still do it no matter what because I feel proud to be African. And it's very interesting to watch them kind of debate among themselves what is appropriate in American culture and then what they want to hold on to from their tradition, because that's an important important aspect of their lives.
Now, you could have told the story of the journey from Sudan to Kenya. That could have been a documentary.
I mean, that could be a whole historical documentary unto itself. And we do, in the first few minutes of the film, try to give just the basics of the information about the war. I mean, what is going on in Sudan and continues to go on in Sudan to this day is an abomination, a civil war that, you know, knows no boundaries, is both economic, it has a religious component, there's a racial component. It's really just an awful situation over there.
Well, in terms of the journey from Sudan to Kenya, that was about 1,000 miles or so.
Yeah, there's conflicting accounts. Depending on where one happened to be living during the flare-ups in the Civil War, sometimes these guys traveled for hundreds and hundreds of miles, as you say, sometimes less. But they had to, once they were abandoned and once they were orphaned, they still were not out of danger. They had to kind of bound together, and they became a group, a legion of about 20,000 young kids. And they made their way across the border to Ethiopia, where there was relative peace, and that's where they first settled in a first refugee camp. But then, to make the story just even more incredible, the Ethiopian government had a change.
Haile Selassie passed.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And they had their own kind of civil war going on, and these guys were kicked out of Ethiopia, and they had to cross a river full of crocodiles with soldiers firing on them from one side back into Sudan, to where there were soldiers waiting to kidnap and hurt them again. And they had to make their way back into Sudan to the southern border with Kenya, where there was peace at the time. And the UN helped them get across the border into another refugee camp. So these guys you hear them tell this tale, and it almost sounds like a sort of biblical, mythological tale of survival, talking about watching their friends get eaten by lions and having to swim across rivers full of crocodiles, and then magically somehow many of them surviving and making their way to this refugee camp in Kenya where they lived for 10 years before resettling to the United States.
And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about surviving here in the United States, some of the issues that these young men faced when they were resettled here in the United States and continue to face. This is Liz Brown, Mondays at 9. I'm talking to John Schneck, one of the producers, directors of the documentary The Lost Boys of Sudan, joining us from San Francisco. My name is Liz Brown. I'll be back after this break. Stay with us.
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill, but she will return tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. So stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
How dare you create an argument for public health that exempts the casinos? You wouldn't do that. If we had an avian flu epidemic in St. Louis, would you exempt the casinos from those regulations?
Pretty good. No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, so it kind of betrayed the argument on its face.
For the smartest talk on radio, it's the Sloan Ranger Show, weekdays at 5 o'clock, only on AM 920 WGNU.
Are you ready to step out? Are you ready to put those dancing shoes on? Are you ready to listen to the music that made America swing? Then you're ready for Swing Time. Goldie's Music has compiled over 40 of the best of the big band era dance songs in a 3-CD set called Swing Time. Enjoy Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, Duke Ellington, Woody Herman, Benny Goodman, Count Basie, Artie Shaw, Les Brown, Sammy Kaye, Stan Kenton, and many, many more. All songs have been digitally remastered for the highest quality and sound. Keep the party swinging with Swing Time. This collection of masterpieces is not available in any store. Here's how to order.
Call 1-800-577-3995. That's 1-800-577-3995. 1-800-577-3995.
Swing Time makes a great gift.
Hey everybody, I'm Scott Cooper. I want to invite you to tune in to my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. right here on WGNU. Join me as I take you on a journey inside the incredible world of flowers. I'll entice you with ideas from weddings to home entertaining and so very much more. I'm all about flowers and a whole lot of fun. Please join me Tuesdays at 10 a.m. as we stop and smell the flowers right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
We now return you back to the west of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today, but we'll have more of the best of the wake-up call following top-of-the-hour news, traffic, and weather. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Mondays at 9. I'm talking to John Schneck, one of the producers, directors of the documentary The Lost Boys of Sudan, joining us from San Francisco. John, talk to us about how Peter and Santino, how they connected to their lives in America. First of all, where were they taken to live, and are they still there?
Well, they were originally taken to Houston, Texas, mm-hmm. where about 120 or so Lost Boys live. They were resettled by the YMCA, which was the agency that was doing the work of resettlement in Houston, to a great extent, and they were placed in an apartment in Houston with about three or four other Lost Boys, and they were kind of directed towards jobs that, you know, sort of menial jobs that were minimum wage type jobs. Santino began to work in a factory assembling hard drives for computers on the night shift, and Peter, who was a little more antsy about finding something that he called kind of proudful work, work that he could use his mind with and something that he could have some pride in, was not satisfied with something like that, and he really tried to find something that would be something that he could be proud of, and he didn't find menial work, something that he could call back and tell his friends in Africa that he was doing with any kind of pride. And so he very quickly got frustrated with Houston. He worked for a temp agency for a while, and he heard after a few months that a cousin of his had a friend who was going to high school in Kansas. And so he got in his car one day, which he had bought, a used car, and he literally drove himself to Kansas.
And he didn't tell his friend.
No, he didn't tell his friends. He didn't tell anybody. He didn't tell us. He didn't tell nobody that he was living with really had much of an idea where he was with. We, fortunately, you know, we were able to fairly quickly figure out what had happened. We got on the phone to some guys, some Sudanese guys that we knew in California, and somebody knew a friend of Peter's that might know, and we called them, and we sort of tracked him down, and we got on a plane, and we were in Kansas City the next day.
Where why did he do it like that? Did you talk to him about what caused him to just get in his car and go? It's not like he's driven across the country before. I mean, I'm certain that he hadn't driven much more than just around the streets of Houston.
Yeah, I mean, it's we were just amazed.
Well, I guess if you've gone 1,000 miles from Sudan to Kenya through rivers and all of that stuff, getting in a car traveling is not that big of a deal.
You're absolutely right. I mean, in his mind, he thought, well, I have no allegiance to Houston. It's mm-hmm. arbitrarily it was given to me as a place to live. There's no reason for me to stay there if I feel like there's a opportunity somewhere else. And parenthetically, immigrants to this country and refugees to this country do often do what's called a second migration once they get here. You know, they discover that they have a family member or a friend that can get them a good job or a good school in another place, and they often do things like this. So it's not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
But we were totally taken aback by it and felt like, wow, what an incredible thing to do. And his take on it was not so much that he was turning his back on his friends. Obviously, he didn't feel that way himself. He felt like, look, you know, I need to do what I need to do in order to make my life move forward. And he felt like he just was not going to get the satisfaction that he wanted of getting into school and getting a decent job where he was. And he felt like the agency in Houston was not helping him.
And despite the name of the film, The Lost Boys of Sudan, he's not, by any stretch of the mean, a boy.
No, I mean, this is, you're talking about a guy who's, you know, who we don't know exactly, but somewhere in the range of 18 to 21.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like he was kind of given a little bit of a raw deal. He felt like his age that the government had, that the UN had given him arbitrarily, was actually older than he was, and that he really did deserve to be in high school because he felt when he entered this country that he was 18, and that because of that he should be in high school.
So did he get into high school?
He did. He ended up getting having his Sudanese birth certificate reissued and sent to him in Kansas, which said that he was under 18, and he walked into a high school in Olathe, Kansas, which is a suburb of Kansas City, and they were very generous and offered him a spot, and he he took it and really took to it. When he made his way into that suburban high school, he felt like he had reached some kind of Shangri-La. I mean, you know, free school with nice people and, you know, in a pleasant, clean place. And he really felt like, you know, this was what he had come to the United States for.
Well, let's talk about the issue that America has a difficult time talking about, the issue of race. And racism here in the United States. Did either Peter or Santino have stories to tell about the issue of race? And also, as white filmmakers, what did you discover about race in this country in the making of this film with these young men?
Well, the story for us started when we arrived in the refugee camp in Africa. One of the first things that these young men asked us and wanted to know about America was, is it true that all young black men in the States are in prison?
Mm.
And Megan and I sort of looked at each other. We wanted to cry because the question is such a complicated one. I mean, our first initial response is, well, no, that's not true. Don't worry about it. But, of course, there is an element of truth in what they're asking, which is that our country does have a crisis with race, and there is a disproportionate number of young black men who are in prison, who do get into trouble.
And also, we have a country that targets African men and puts them in prison.
Exactly.
As well.
We have a legacy in our country of racism, which has led us to this peculiar and unpleasant point of having a crisis. And these guys, because they're black, you know, we're stepping into this situation where a large number of Americans, we're going to see them as young black men.
And also as people who didn't speak very much English, the issue that had been exported to this lowly refugee camp in Kenya is the issue of racism and the racist stereotypes of African people.
Well, you put your finger on a really important thing, which is that the other part of that question that was really incredibly depressing to us, which is, was that it was the first one they asked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, of all the things about America that make their way out into the world, and Lord knows there's a number of things that our country exports in terms of our culture, one of the first things was that there's an incredible problem of racism in our country. And so we start to think about that. Well, wow, I mean, that's the one thing that these guys know about our country.
And it's a lie. If the question was, are all black men in jail, it's a lie, and it's a lie based upon race, and it's a lie based upon racism, and it had no problem traveling.
It's a lie, but it's also a lie that has an incredible history behind
mm-hmm.
it, which suggests something which is true, which is that our country has because of the legacy of slavery and racism and on, we do have a crisis that we still have not solved.
Absolutely.
And it's incredibly complicated and incredibly dark and depressing. And so these guys were scared about that, and as they had the right to be.
And in terms of, because I'm so sorry, John, we only have a couple more, well, we only have a minute here left.
Yes, yes.
In terms of their relationships with people of African descent here in this country, did they create those types of bonds with any people of African descent?
Yeah, I mean, you see in the film that there are a couple of interactions they have with African Americans, and there are some connections that got made. We really thought that there had not been enough communication on behalf of the government and the agencies to get these guys connected to African-American groups, and
mm-hmm.
we really hope that one thing the film can do is start this kind of conversation where black Africans coming as refugees and immigrants can connect to African-Americans who live in the United States.
And in terms of where people can get a hold of this film and see this film, where can they go, John?
Well, the film recently came out on DVD in November, so it's available. If you go to lostboysfilm.com, which is our website, which has, by the way, incredible resources for educators and community groups who, and just for people who are interested in getting more information and perhaps getting involved with refugee resettlement in their own communities. And there's a link on the site to the company that sells the video. You can go to Netflix or Amazon and any number of places retail video stores to find the DVD.
John Schneck, thank you so much for joining us here on the Wake Up Call.
Thank you very much.
Happy holidays.
You too.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for the ABC News, our news, weather, and traffic. And then we'll have more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today, so we'll return with more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound at the below, that's the below knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, help me, sisters.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever.
Issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. If you're looking for a new car, the yearly list says you might want to think import. Here's ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey.
Acura introduces the 2007.
It's all about control, stability control.
Stability control is included in the base price.
The 13 models on the top safety list all have it, and they are all foreign made.
We think that electronic stability control should be standard equipment on all vehicles.
Adrian Lund, president of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, which says Detroit is lagging behind in stability control. That's why no U.S.-made car is on the safety list this year. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Michael Richards says he flipped out and he's embarrassed about that bizarre outburst on stage last week.
For me to be in a comedy club and flip out and say this crap, you know, I'm deeply, deeply sorry.
The stand-up comedian did apologize on Late Night with David Letterman after spewing obscenities and racial slurs after two black men heckled him. Also on the show is Jerry Seinfeld, Richard's friend and former cast member on the sitcom Seinfeld.
I know how shattered he is about this, and he deserves a chance. That's why I want him to come on. He deserves a chance to apologize.
Richards and Seinfeld's comments, courtesy of Worldwide Pants. Fox is pulling the plug on a book by O.J. Simpson in which the football legend explains how he would have killed his ex-wife, Nicole, and her friend Ron Goldman had he done it. And an interview to publicize it, attorney Jonathan Pollack says that it's a no-brainer. He represents the Goldman family. Fox President Rupert Murdoch, meanwhile, says it probably wasn't the smartest idea in the first place. President Bush has breakfast with the troops in Hawaii, the last leg on his Asian trip. He'll also get a briefing from Pacific commanders later on today. That meeting will happen not far from the World War II memorials at Pearl Harbor. This is ABC News.
Feels like I get this same cold every year. So I got the same nighttime medicine I always get. But I was congested all night, so it wasn't the same.
Many cold medicines have changed. NyQuil Cold Flu Relief no longer has a decongestant. New Tylenol Cold Nighttime does. It helps relieve more of your worst cold symptoms, and it helps you sleep. It's one more step towards a pain-free world. Stop. Think. New Tylenol Cold. Take only as directed.
The Office Depot pre-Thanksgiving sale. Our prices won't be beat on notebook computers, digital cameras, MP3 players, and HD TVs. We won't be undersold. So shop now through Wednesday and avoid the after-Thanksgiving crowds. Office Depot, taking care of business and the holidays.
Taking care of business.
Office Depot. Quantities limited while supplies last.
A little bit of medical history was made this week in Baltimore. Here's ABC's Karen Chase.
Five desperate strangers pooled their hope and their organs to arrange a five-way kidney transplant, believed to be the world's first. All five, three men and two women, are said to be doing well after simultaneously receiving new kidneys in an operation appropriately performed at Johns Hopkins Comprehensive Transplant Center. It took 12 surgeons, 6 operating rooms, 5 donors, and endless ingenuity to pull it off. Four of the patients approached the hospital with a willing but incompatible donor. The fifth had been on a waiting list for a kidney. A fifth altruistic donor provided the final missing piece. Karen Chase, ABC News.
The Grinch may be alive and well, and he may be working at one of the world's toy factories. The experts say there could be a toy shortage this Christmas. They're blaming a variety of things, production problems, consumer demand, and even blackouts in southern China where many of the factories are located. I'm Daria Alvinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, officials with Canadian National say it appears that all their equipment was working properly prior to a fatal train versus car accident in St. Clair County. Jim Kaderis, a spokesperson for CN, says they'll still look into what caused the accident that killed three people. 43-year-old Tina Porter, her daughter 13-year-old Alyssa Porter, and 13-year-old Donna Calvert were killed when the SUV they were riding in crossed the tracks at Main Street and was struck by an oncoming train. A 12-year-old girl remains hospitalized in critical condition. There is no word on whether the owner of the Seventh Inn restaurant plans to rebuild following a devastating fire at the Baldwin establishment. Metro West Fire Protection District Chief Vince Loyal says it's sad to see the restaurant go up in flames.
It will be a loss to the community and, in the neighborhood. So that's unfortunate. The fortunate thing is that no one was injured.
The five-star restaurant has been located off Manchester Road for more than 30 years. There's no word on what sparked the blaze that officials say began near a DJ booth in the bar area. Finally this hour, investigators believe a fire that destroyed a Metro East tire store last week was intentionally set. The fire leveled the auto tire on North Main Street in Edwardsville early Thursday morning. Police believe the fire was set to cover up a burglary. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Tahiti Village. Why haven't you called Tahiti Village yet? You've heard Tanya Roberts on the radio offering couples complimentary 3 days, 2 nights hotel in Las Vegas. So call today, 877-57-VEGAS, 877-57-VEGAS. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Breakfast at Sonic. Eastbound 44 at Antire and 141 overturned vehicle in left lane. Expect delays. Westbound 64 at 157. There's an accident right shoulder, and it's already reduced construction zone and it has traffic backed up as you approach 159. Eastbound 70, TR Hughes and Mid Rivers. Look for slow pockets of traffic. Northbound 270 at Gravois through Marshall. You can expect delays. Eastbound 40 between Timberlake Manor and 270. Look for congestion there. Westbound 270 at New Halls Ferry and New Florissant. Look for delays possible. Westbound 270 at Illinois 3 and the Canal Bridge. Look for congestion. Westbound 5570 at 3rd Street and the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic. Look for some delays as you roll across into the landing this morning. Northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge is slow from midway back through the 8th Street ramp. Highway 159 at Mulligan, there's an accident reported. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Breakfast at Sonic. If you're hungry this morning, you should really try Sonic's Steak, Egg, and Cheese Burrito, thinly sliced steak. Egg and cheese wrapped in a warm tortilla. People really like this burrito. It's not just good, it's Sonic good. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thanksgiving Day, Thursday. Look forward to mostly sunny today with a high around 50. For this evening, mostly clear, low in the mid-30s. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high around 60. Wednesday evening, mostly clear, once again, low in the upper 30s. Then on Thursday, Thanksgiving morning, look forward to mostly sunny skies. Expected highs around 60. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have very clear skies. Our current temperature is a crisp 32 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 30. And clear skies as well. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today. We're hoping to have her back at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. But until then, we'll bring you more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you and people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how
can this end? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
The following program is a best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll have more traffic and weather at the bottom of the hour. Liz Brown is out ill, so enjoy more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Oh, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up and you need to get to me. We have much, 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 much to talk about. And I don't know, for the last few years or so, I have not really talked a lot about environmental issues on the show, and it's for a personal reason. It's just too awful. It's just too awful, the things that are happening in our world. And I know that I often bring you information that is bad. And sometimes bad news has a way of paralyzing us and not allowing us to move forward. But we're going to have to shake that off, because when it comes to our environment, we have to deal with it. We really have to deal with what is happening today. And so, having said that, know that the following conversation is not going to be good news. It's not going to be good news at all. But it certainly should be a wake-up call to you about the issues that are confronting us. I have with me this morning Nancy Stoner, director of the Clean Water Project at the Natural Resources Defense Council, joining us from Washington, D.C., to talk about something that the EPA is getting ready to do. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Good. Nancy, there is very little good news in the, coming out of the EPA nowadays. Talk to us about what the EPA is getting ready to do with regard to sewage.
Well, the first thing I actually would like to do is start with a quote, and I'd like you to keep this quote in mind as you hear about this policy change. Teddy Roosevelt, President Theodore Roosevelt, said in 1910, civilized people should be able to dispose of sewage in a better way than putting it in the drinking water.
Mm.
That was 1910. Now it's 2004, almost 2005, and EPA has a new policy that would make it legal for sewer operators to dump inadequately treated sewage into our waterways to put more bacteria, viruses, and parasites in our drinking water and in the waterways where we fish and swim.
And, you know, given the viruses that exist in 2005 that didn't exist back when Teddy Roosevelt was president, we should be terrified at the possibilities of outbreaks, the possibilities of disease, the possibility of death, of dumping today's viruses into our waterways.
Absolutely. According to experts, there are about 8 million Americans now who get sick every year from waterborne diseases.
And that's just water turning on your tap and drinking the water.
No, it's not just that, actually. It's that plus swimming in contaminated waters and eating contaminated shellfish. There's a lot of ways in which the pollution that we dump into the environment comes back to haunt us. And this is an estimate because we actually don't have very good data about what causes the illness. Most people who get sick from waterborne illness get gastroenteritis. So that's stomach ache, diarrhea, vomiting, fever, very unpleasant. But most people recover. The people who don't always recover are the elderly, small children, cancer patients, and other people with weakened immune systems.
And we're also talking about the water that's used to water our produce as it grows?
Absolutely. But, you know, the thing about water is, of course, we all learned in elementary school, is it's all connected. You discharge the water, whether it's into the rivers, into a wetland, into a lake. It sinks into the groundwater. We pump it up for irrigation. It's all of a piece. And so if we contaminate any of it, it will have downstream effects.
So talk to us about the policy that existed before. What is the EPA changing?
Well, the current law says that sewage has to be fully treated whenever it's feasible to do so. There's an exception now for emergencies. So, you know, if there's a hurricane in St. Louis, if there's some kind of extreme rain event, then the sewage doesn't get fully treated. It's recognized as an emergency, not feasible. So we're not talking about emergency situations in here. What we're talking about is changing that rule. So instead of a presumption that the sewage goes through the whole treatment process, it no longer would in a rain event if either the pipes or the sewage treatment plant were overwhelmed. So what that, of course, does is create incentives not to have good, strong pipes, not to have adequate capacity throughout the system.
Mm. Let's talk about the actual treatment process. So, and I want people to really be clear on this. For the last 50 years, the sewage treatment involved like a two-step process. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes. The first process is solids removal, taking out the larger solids that are in sewage. The second process is biological treatment. Essentially, they use bacteria to eat the sewage in the second treatment. And then sometimes also there's a third step in the process called disinfection. That's where usually chlorine is sprayed on the sewage to kill pathogens. What this policy would do is say when it's a rain event again, of any size, the second part of the process could be skipped. So solids would be removed. But the sewage would not go through the biological treatment, which is actually what removes the largest amount of the pollutant load. And then disinfection is not necessarily required either. It's not, just the fact that you're skipping the second process doesn't mean that you have to do disinfection. It varies from place to place. And I actually looked at the comments that the St. Louis Metropolitan Sewer District filed on this policy. They support it. And they said in particular that they objected to having a requirement that disinfection be done every time the sewage was not fully treated. They called that a dangerous precedent.
Oh, Jesus.
Which, it's just amazing to me that the notion that not disinfecting they would think is dangerous, whereas we all would look at it completely the opposite.
Because that's the way that it is. That's the way that it is. So they're saving lots and lots of money by not having to treat this sewage.
That is their motivation. Their motivation is to cut corners and save money. And the reason is because we are not investing enough as a society in our water and wastewater system.
Oh, wait, I want to back up just a little bit, Nancy,
okay,
because we didn't get to the second part of what they're going to do. They're going to blend the stuff that they don't treat now into the water, right?
What they do is they take the sewage that's coming in during the rain event that's dilute because of how much rain leaks into the pipes, and they will skip the treatment process on that other than the solids, and then they mix it with the fully treated sewage. And they do this mostly as a means of meeting certain limits. The limits that they have, you know, at the end of the pipe, just before they discharge, are averages. They have 7-day averages. They have 30-day averages. And they use dilution to meet that. They use this blending of the two sewage streams to meet that. And they use averaging over the week and over the month to meet that. So they're actually putting a lot more pollutants of all kinds, ones that rob the water of oxygen so fish can't breathe, ones that cause nutrient pollution, which, of course, adds to the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, and then all the pathogens, the viruses,
and
the parasites.
Let's talk about the pathogens. What kind of pathogens are we talking about that are going to exist in our water that didn't exist a month ago?
Well, first of all, I do feel like I should address the timing. This hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
And I'm actually trying to stop it. So I'm hoping that the answer will be none.
Okay.
Okay, but if this goes through, it will put more viruses like that cause, for example, hepatitis, put more E. coli bacteria, will put more cryptosporidium, which, of course, is what killed almost 100 people in Milwaukee in 1933 when the drinking water became contaminated. We'll put more Giardia in. Those are parasites, and they are not removed very well at all by the treatment process when secondary treatment is skipped. In fact, disinfection doesn't work very well on them either. So all of those types of parasites make people sick, as I said, usually with gastroenteritis, sometimes also with respiratory illness, but very serious kinds of diseases like hepatitis, like cholera, that kind of thing can occur. And it is most threatening to those who don't have strong immune systems, and those people can die.
So where are we in terms of the place, where are we in terms of this legislation? When is a decision going to be made on whether or not the EPA will be able to reverse this policy?
Well, it's not a legislative proposal in Congress. It's completely up to the EPA whether to do this or not. And this is a policy that's already been put out for public comment. Last year it was. 98,000 people wrote in. Almost all of them wrote in and opposed it. The sewer operators and a number of cities do support it because it saves money, as we talked about, in the short term, although it passes on costs to the public, I think. But that happened last year, and now basically the agency is ready to move forward. They're briefing political people. As you may know, Administrator Leavitt is leaving the EPA. That may slow it down a little bit. But I think we're likely to see a final decision early next year.
So early in what year? 2005. So early in 2005. What do you recommend that people do?
Well, one thing that they can do is to call their legislators. EPA has not heard from anyone in the Missouri delegation yet on this issue. And there is a letter being circulated by Senator Shepherds from Vermont right now. So
they haven't heard from Congressman Clay, they haven't heard from Congressman Cleaver, they haven't heard from any of our other congresspeople.
They haven't heard from any of them yet. They did hear from 64 members of the House last year. As I said, there's a Senate effort right now, but the House members from Missouri are not on there yet. And so calling your representatives and say you want them to weigh in, I think that would be very helpful.
And what's the language that people should use when they call their congressperson or email their congressperson and ask them to weigh in on this issue?
They should call it the blending policy, because that's what EPA calls it,
okay,
the proposed blending policy, and they should let them know that that they want to have their waterways protected, they want to have public health protected, and to do that, they want full treatment for sewage. And let me just say that really is not a lot to ask, I don't think. This is part of the Clean Water Act that was passed in 1972. This is not, you know, extreme, you know, environmentalism that we want to have sewage treated. This was something that we decided upon as a society more than 30 years ago. And at that time, it was very well-established technology. And so what we want to do is make sure we have that basic technology in place to protect public health. I happen to have the Capitol switchboard number here with me.
Very good.
202-224-3121.
One more time, please.
202-224-3121.
And when they call that number, what do they ask for?
Well, they ask for their representatives.
Okay.
They ask for their senators or their representatives in the House.
And that this is the blending.
Proposed blending policy.
With the EPA.
That's correct. Sewage blending.
Very good. And I want to thank you very much, Nancy Stoner, Director of the Clean Water Project, joining us from Washington, D.C.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. We're taking a break. When we come back, we'll be here to take your calls at 454-0400, 1-877-920-WGNU. And
you're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. It's the best of today because Liz Brown is out ill. This is AM 920 WGNU. Good morning, St. Louis. 28 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Advil Cold and Sinus. Westbound 64 over on the Illinois side at 157 is an accident on right shoulder and is already reduced and already reduced construction zone lanes, so you can expect traffic to be slowing past 159 as you approach there. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and Mid Rivers Mall, look for slow traffic in pockets. Northbound 270 at Gravoy and Marshall, slow pockets there. Westbound 270 at New Halls Ferry and New Florissant, look for no delays. Westbound 40 at Spady and Brentwood, look for slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street into the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect delays, so look for slow traffic there as well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at the Illinois Bank, look for no delays. And westbound Kingbridge traffic, northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect delays from 8th Street into the Poplar Street Bridge. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Advil Cold and Sinus. Advil Cold and Sinus, with all the power of Advil Plus, hard-working decongestant. Powerful cold and sinus relief, now available at your pharmacy counter. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thanksgiving Day. Mostly sunny today, high around 50 today. This evening, mostly clear, low in the mid-30s. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high around 60. Wednesday evening, mostly clear, with a low in the upper 30s. And on Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, mostly sunny, with a high around 60. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 34 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting clear skies and 32 degrees. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. That's up next. Liz Brown is out ill today. She should be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. sharp. But until then, we'll bring you more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down. At 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU, 920 a.m.
For a look at the world news that matters most to you, tune in to AM 920 WGNU's Global News Updates, weekday mornings 7:45, 8:45, and 9:45, weekday evenings at 6:45, sponsored by Reasonable Construction, 314-382-2200.
Let's talk turkey.
If you're using an outdoor grill, a water smoker, or any fast cook method to cook your turkey this Thanksgiving, stuff the bird after it's done. If you stuff your turkey and fast cook it, then stuffing won't be done. So cook it separately and add it later.
Keep listening for more Let's Talk Turkey, and have a great Thanksgiving.
This tip sponsored by Carteret Mortgage Corporation. For all your mortgage needs, call Tracy at 314-482-3570. Carteret Mortgage Corporation.
For the issues that matter most to you, of course, it's AM 920 WGNU. This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Liz Brown is out ill today, so we bring you more of the best of the wake-up call. Stick around for news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. In the last hour, I mentioned a story that I think bears repeating this hour. It's a story that comes, of course, not out of our multi-billion-dollar media industry. It's a story that comes out of The Guardian. And it's a Guardian reporter that is located here in the United States in the city of Los Angeles. And it's a story that underscores the fact that Hollywood has joined the war. Universal Pictures announced that it will make a movie, The Battle for Fallujah. They've even gone so far as to hire actor Harrison Ford as the lead in a movie that they're saying is about an effort to defeat the insurgency. This movie will be based on the yet-to-be-finished book entitled No True Glory, The Battle for Fallujah by Bing West. Bing West has been quoted as saying, "If America needs a hard job done, the Marines will do it, and they won't lose their humanity in the process or any sleep over pulling the trigger. Yes, they are the world's most lethal killing machine. That's what America needs in battle." Having said that, I think it is going to be fairly clear that in this movie, made by Hollywood, as Hollywood has joined the war effort, this movie will, it is doubtful that this movie will have very many Iraqi faces in it, and that the Iraqi people will not figure very prominently in this. The reality is that the Iraqi people have figured very prominently in the war in Iraq, and in particular in the battle against Fallujah. This morning I have joining me Gail Murphy, co-founder of CoPink, a women's peace group. And Gail is also a member of the Delegation of Families for Peace that are headed to Fallujah. And Gail's going to tell us why. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Gail, you are part of a delegation of people that are headed to Fallujah. Tell us about who you are.
Well, I'm a woman who has decided to devote the majority of her life right now to ending the war and occupation in Iraq. I joined Code Pink before the war started. Code Pink grew out of a sentiment that the threat of attack on Iraq was truly a potential disaster. And so we created a vigil in front of the White House, which we held for 4 months, and then we organized a women's peace rally in March where 10,000 women came from all over the country. We marched to the White House. We surrounded it. And we've been working tirelessly ever since to try to end this war and to bring our troops home.
Didn't you also confront Hillary Clinton about her position on the war?
We did, among many others. Yeah, mm-hmm. We actually went to her office to find out what her position was and where she stood. We knew she had voted for the resolution to go to war, but we wanted to know if, with new information, she was shifting, and she wasn't, so we gave her a pink slip. that day, and there were about, I'd say about 100 of us dressed in pink in Congress. Mm-hmm. And we did not leave her office until she would meet with us, and she did.
Did you find that, were you surprised by that?
That she would meet with us?
No, are you surprised by her response to you? Because it wasn't a very, her rep is, or the word out there on her is that she would obviously be supportive of your efforts.
Right. Well, not really. She had voted for the resolution. She was married to the president before, so she was getting the intelligence warped as we now know it is. And I think that as a senator from New York, she was under pressure to show a hawkish attitude to, you know, in essence, supposedly to protect the people of New York after 9/11, because those links between 9/11 and Saddam Hussein were still being made, and we now know that. We've known all along, the peace movement has known all along that they were specious connections.
So you're a delegation of an organization, Code Pink, that has joined other delegations that are about peace as well.
Right. Well, we actually, when the war started, we continued our protests in Washington, but after the, in July, a year and a half ago nearly now, we went back to Baghdad. And we opened an occupation watch center with other international peace groups to monitor the occupation, the conduct of the military, the conduct of contractors, to really find out what America's intentions were in the United States and also how Iraqis were living under occupation. We needed to get that information back to particularly the coalition countries to inform the peace groups that all that was being reported in mainstream media and by the coalition governments was not as it really was. Iraqis were truly suffering under the occupation, and we wanted to make sure that that was known to the rest of the world.
So talk to us.
So we organized delegations under the Occupation Watch Center. We organized delegation of journalists, peace activists, women, university professors, and we had a delegation of parliamentarians that were about to go in April of last year to really take a look at what the policies of the U.S. government and the interim Iraqi government and how that was going to affect the democratization process. And that delegation was canceled because of the first attack on Fallujah, and it just became too difficult to travel.
So talk to us about the humanitarian crisis that is in Iraq and in particular in Fallujah.
Well, obviously the physical assault on Iraq is wreaking havoc on people's lives. The electricity availability is minimal. It's, for some people, it's an hour a day. The water quality is terrible because of the destruction of water systems and also just the degradation because the promised contractors, either haven't organized themselves to do the work and now find it too difficult to do the work given the security situation. When the U.S. invaded Iraq, they did not protect the borders, so all kinds of people have come in and are now also creating havoc in Iraq. The crime situation is out of control. The U.S. is not providing security. The Iraqis are not able to provide security. So really, it's a Pandora's box, and the lid has been lifted off, and the Iraqis are suffering as a result.
How many people are we talking about that are in Fallujah now?
How many have been able to return, but the estimates are that there are 150,000 refugees from this most recent assault and living under very difficult conditions. In fact, we're trying to get video interviews and footage of the situation out as we speak. We have an Iraqi colleague who is trying to get to Fallujah. It's very difficult to enter. The U.S. has surrounded it with barricades. It's very strict entry. We've heard that they're taking DNA samples and eye scans so that they can keep track of everyone who's there. But also fighting is continuing in Fallujah. So it is not... whatever the U.S. intention in Fallujah was to root out the insurgents, it's not worked.
So what is it that you all are planning to do?
I think that one thing that we have found to be of critical importance is a people-to-people connection, to certainly let the Iraqis know that they're Americans who never agreed to this war, who are fighting to stop the war and the occupation, who are demanding that the troops be brought home now, that there are political, diplomatic, and structural things that can be done alternative to war in Iraq. And so I think it's important for many of us to go as close to Iraq now as we can. We can no longer go in safely. So our intention is
you cannot go into Iraq at all.
Well, it's just too dangerous for foreigners right now. There are so many elements operating, you know, for various reasons, whether it's a criminal element wanting to, you know, to rob, whether it's anti-American elements, whether it's U.S. military, Iraqi government. You know, they're not exactly keen on seeing peace activists in Iraq. So there are, you know, many reasons that we consider it a risk to go into Iraq right now. So going to Jordan is as close as we can get to continue carrying our message of peace, and that we as Americans and many internationals also care about the Iraqi people, that we're continuing our struggle to end this disaster and to try to find retribution for them.
Who are some of the people that are going to be making this journey with you?
They are members of military family members who have lost loved ones in Iraq and who believe that it is an unjust war and also want to carry this message and help the people of Fallujah. Also members of families who have lost loved ones during the 9/11,
the attack on
the Twin Towers.
Now, about how many people do you think are going to be able to make the journey with you?
I think we are going to be at least a dozen. We also have other peace activists who are going to be joining us from United for Peace and Justice. I will be taking a video camera. There will also be another video camera there.
What will you hope to film?
When we get to Iraq, we're going to be meeting with Jordanian peace activists and Iraqis who are in Jordan.
So, and we're talking about the Iraq-Jordan border here.
Yes, we
okay.
are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, when you
Amman,
get
the capital of Jordan, is about 12-hour drive to Baghdad, and that's usually how we enter into Iraq, is to drive from Amman to Baghdad. But this time, we'll only be going to the border, and at the border, we're hoping to meet with Iraqi families who are able to make the journey, and that's still a question because the road between Baghdad and Amman is not a safe one. It's safe up to the border, but there have been serious attacks on the road. There are parts of the road that are controlled by the U.S. military where people cannot enter. But we're hoping that we will be able to meet with Iraqi families who also have lost loved ones in this disaster.
And you'll be videotaping that as well.
And we'll be videotaping.
Will there be any problems with you videotaping that? Do you anticipate any problems?
Not if there are no military or Iraqi government authorities around. There has been a real media blackout in Iraq. I think you probably know that Al Jazeera is now out of the country.
Yes.
There's been a slow campaign to completely eliminate them from being able to report. No one is allowed into Fallujah, as far as I know at this point. No one is allowed to videotape in hospitals and clinics. Certainly no military installations are allowed to be videotaped. Journalists really have a tough time in Iraq. And I think it's an interesting story, the genesis of this delegation and our humanitarian effort. Dar Jamail, who is a young, an American independent journalist, has worked over the last year in Iraq reporting back to us. And his seeing of the second attack on Fallujah, he was so devastated by the destruction and the displacement of people and the loss of life that he gave us really the idea to try and get immediate relief to the people. And so he organized a group of doctors who volunteered to receive money from us that we were able to get to them. And they bought medicines and supplies, simple things like blanket and clean water, to be able to get to the refugees immediately. The Red Crescent was undersupplied. The international non-governmental agencies working in Iraq are out of Iraq. And as far as we could tell, the Ministry of Health was doing nothing in terms of emergency relief. So it was just something we couldn't refuse doing, and he was willing to coordinate this effort, and it's been really, you know, it's a small contribution given the enormity of the disaster, but at least it's something that we can do directly.
And how much money were you able to raise, and how many supplies were you able to put together?
We have raised close to $100,000 in a matter of weeks, I think.
And you did that largely on the Internet?
Yes. I think we've sent out alerts, and people responded immediately. I think it's been in this... You know, with the re-election of George Bush and the obvious continuation of our foreign policy and our aggression on the people of Iraq, I think that people pulled themselves out of a sort of depression and realized that this was a very tangible thing that they could do to help.
Were you at all concerned about where the money was coming for your humanitarian efforts? Because
where it was going?
No,
or?
Where it was coming from, given this our current government's actions of getting at people that are giving money for different actions. We've had people that, you know, Iraqi organizations, people giving money to those organizations, people receiving money from those organizations, have been held in suspicion by our government.
Mm-hmm.
So were you all at all concerned about that?
No, I wouldn't say so. No, because, you know, we know the doctors who are working with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there are any questions, we know that we're not doing anything illegal. We're not aiding and abetting the enemy. You know, this and most of the money has come from the women of Code Pink who have really resonated with our call to help the people of Fallujah.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I'm talking to Gail Murphy, co-founder of Code Pink, a women's peace group, and also she's a member of the Delegation of Families for Peace, a group of people that are a delegation that's headed to Iraq for humanitarian reasons. We will be back, folks, to take some of your calls and to continue.
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for more best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is ill today. Instead, we are playing the best of, so hopefully we'll see her tomorrow morning right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is your WGNU Global News Update. Dateline Honolulu. President Bush is in Hawaii after his visit to Asia. Today, Bush will have breakfast with troops stationed at area bases, followed by a military briefing from Pacific Command Head Admiral William Fallon. There are no public appearances or fundraisers scheduled for his visit. By the time Air Force One touches down at Andrews Air Force Base outside Washington, it will have traveled around the world. Dateline Baghdad. A U.S. airstrike has killed at least three people in Baghdad's Sadr City district, a stronghold of radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. Iraqi officials say a six-month-old baby was among the dead. They've put the number of wounded at anywhere between 15 and 50. The morning airstrike in the densely populated suburb was just the latest raid by U.S.-led forces on the hunt for a kidnapped American soldier. This is your WGNU Global News Update, sponsored by Reasonable Construction.
Reasonable Construction has reasonable pricing to get the work done now. Reasonable Construction can perform all your rehab, repair, and remodeling projects for commercial and residential. 314-382-2200. Reasonable Construction has in-house payments and home improvement loans. They accept all major credit cards. Call today for your free estimate. 314-382-2200. For more information, go to their website, www.reasonableconstruction.com. Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic.
At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis.
Sponsored by Reasonable Construction. Stop putting it off.
You in need of financial information that can change your life? Then you need to listen to the Pastor's Hour to Empower each and every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock here on WGNU. Hosted by Minister Ernest Greenlee, Reverend James Willoughby, Mr. Rabbani, Miss Daisy, and Doc Brown. It's designed to provide solutions to the needs of the people, the church, pastors, seniors, youth, and the community at large. Remember, your life does have value. All you need to do is unlock the potential. Find out how on the Pastor's Hour to Empower every Tuesday night at 8 here on AM 920 WGNU.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Liz Brown is out ill today. Instead, we'll bring you more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for more following the top of the hour news, weather, and traffic. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454-6609 is my fax. If you want to toll free long distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. I am talking to this morning Gail Murphy, co-founder of Code Pink, a women's peace group, and also a member of the delegation of Families for Peace, joining us from Washington, D.C. Gail is talking to us about the trip that she and other delegates will make from December 27th to January 4th to deliver humanitarian supplies to refugees from the United States' attack on Fallujah. Gail, welcome back.
Thank you.
Talk to us about how the goods, the humanitarian supplies that you are taking over to Fallujah, or at least at the Jordan-Iraq border, how are they going to be distributed?
We are intending to both, well, as I mentioned before, there are doctors, Iraqi doctors, who have been working with us already and have made distributions to the refugee camps. And through local organizations that have been set up spontaneously to help the refugees.
and if I might interrupt for one second, define what a refugee in Iraq is.
Well, in the case of Fallujah, it's someone who had to suddenly leave their home because of a aggressive attack on their town. And some of these people left, most of the people left really in a hurry, and it's winter in Iraq right now, and it's quite cold, and people didn't have time to bring clothing.
People don't think about that. You don't think of Iraq as being cold.
Mm-hmm. So it's in the 40s at night right now. So people left without adequate clothing. So one of the items that we've been distributing are blankets, just to keep families warm, because they're living in sort of makeshift housing and in halls of mosques and wherever people will put them up, because there have been no preparations for the exodus that's happened because of the attack. And Fallujah has been nearly destroyed, so a lot of people don't have homes to return to. I think the expectation on the part of the Fallujans was that they would, you know, they would just kind of hunker down. There would be a surgical attack, and they'd be able to, you know, rise out of it fairly easily. But it's not the case. And so we want to also find out what their condition is. When are they going to be able to return? What kind of assistance are they getting from the Iraqi government? and from the U.S. military.
And you hope to get that information from who?
Well, reports from people who are going to be joining us, coming up from those areas to join us. And also, as I said, we have a colleague who's videotaping interviews right now, trying to get stories from the refugees of what happened. We're not.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around after the ABC News. Our local news, traffic and weather, we'll have more of the best of the Wake Up Call. This is AM 920 WGNU.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you and people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel me, brothers. Stop resisting.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Michael Richards says he's not sure what got into him the other night.
I lost my temper on stage. I was at a comedy club trying to do my act, and I got heckled, and I took it badly and went into a rage.
But some are saying that's an understatement. The former Seinfeld cast member spewed obscenities, even dropping the N-word a few times. Richard's mea culpa was last night on The Late Show with David Letterman. Also on the show, his friend and former castmate Jerry Seinfeld.
I was extremely upset about it, and he is extremely upset about it. And I asked him if he would come on the show tonight.
Their comments courtesy of Letterman's production company Worldwide Pants. The 13 cars on this year's Insurance Institute for Highway Safety list have two things in common. One, they all have electronic stability control. The other, that they are all imports. For the first time, no domestic models made the list. A teenager is at the center of the investigation into a bus crash yesterday in Alabama that left three students dead, critically injured several others. Authorities aren't saying if they plan to charge the young driver who police say came too close to or may have struck the bus, causing it to slam through a guardrail and to fall off the elevated roadway. The community is taking it pretty hard.
A woman I met last night said that when she heard about it, she wondered about the three girls who died. What were their plans this evening? What were they thinking about doing tomorrow? This is a tragedy that has shaken this entire community.
That's ABC Steve Osunsami in Huntsville, Alabama. A recall to tell you about from McCall that affects over 4 million Polly Pockets play sets. The Consumer Product Safety Commission says at least three children have choked on tiny magnets that can fall off of the toy. This is ABC News.
It's Sam's Club's Day After Thanksgiving event, where we're bringing in the finest of premium and designer brands. So to drive the point home, we've also brought in a fancy pants British announcer.
At Sam's Club's Day After Thanksgiving event, you'll find everything from cashmere blazers and Burberry fragrance to diamond stud earrings and HDTVs, all at Sam's Club's brilliant low prices.
Yeah, we don't really say brilliant here.
What about lovely? Lovely low prices?
No, that sounds very British.
But I am British.
And we're not.
Oh, that's rubbish.
Visit Sam's Club Friday, November 24th. Doors open at 5 a.m. Complimentary breakfast included. Join today to avoid the 10% service fee that applies to non-member purchases.
I'm cruising in my ride, ride 16 switches. You gotta get my floss on, watch it.
Life may never be clean, but with Hoover, your floors can be. Hoover Floormate cleans all your hard floors. Hoover Wind Tunnel 2 Upright vacuums your carpets. Buy them together and get up to a $100 mail-in rebate. So use Hoover and keep it clean. Offer varies. See Hoover.com and participating dealers for details. Expires 1707.
A man who claims to be the leader of a Mormon fundamentalist movement is due in court today. Here's ABC's Gil Gross.
Warren Jeffs had been 2 years on the run as one of the FBI's most wanted when he was caught in an August traffic stop outside Las Vegas. This court hearing will decide whether prosecutors have enough evidence to try him. He's charged with rape for his role in arranging marriages for children, like that of a 14-year-old girl who was allegedly forcibly married to an older first cousin in room 15 of the Caliente, Nevada Hot Springs Motel. Jeffs runs a cult where men have multiple wives, some of them children. Though 10,000 people consider him a prophet, the law considers him a criminal who could get life in prison if convicted. Gil Gross, ABC News.
It's another reason to get the best possible medical care if you're expecting. A Dutch study says preemies and often full-term, very low birth rate babies, weight babies rather, are more likely to have behavioral or emotional problems by the time they reach school age. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, the chief of police for a small St. Clair County community says the town will eventually heal from the loss of three residents killed in a train accident yesterday. Marissa Police Chief Michael Kerprin calls this a tragedy that'll have a large impact on the small town. 43-year-old Tina Porter, her daughter 13-year-old Alyssa Porter, and 13-year-old Donna Calvert were killed when the SUV they were riding in crossed the tracks at Main Street in Marissa and was struck by an oncoming train. A 12-year-old girl was also injured in the accident. She's hospitalized in critical condition. A man is hospitalized with multiple gunshot wounds after a carjacking in a Walmart parking lot. Police say the victim was shot and his car stolen around 3:30 yesterday afternoon at the Maplewood Commons store. Officers chased the suspects into the city of St. Louis, where the chase ended when the vehicle rolled near the Grand Metrolink station. One suspect was arrested after a short foot chase, but the other escaped. The victim is expected to survive. Finally this hour, the Show Me State is making the grade when it comes to reducing traffic fatalities. That's according to a study by the Emergency Nurses Association, which gave Missouri an 8 on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest. Emergency Nurses Association President-elect Donna Mason says she attributes this to Missouri's strict traffic laws.
The reason that Missouri did so well is because they have some really good laws in place to help to protect their drivers. One being they have a universal helmet law for motorcycle riders. They have good laws in place for child passenger safety, and they have very good laws in place for graduated driver's license laws for young people.
The District of Columbia and Washington received perfect scores. Arizona earned the lowest score in the study. This WGNU News report is brought to you by TomTom. TomTom Go is your portable everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. Westbound 64 at 157, that accident's been cleared. No problems to report. You're still in a work zone, though, so just use caution and slow down there. Weber Road onto the ramp to northbound 55. There's an accident reported. Eastbound 40 onto the ramp to northbound 270. Look for an accident on the right shoulder. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and Mid Rivers Mall. You've got slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 270 at Sappington and 44. Expect slow traffic there. Eastbound 40 between Woods Mill and Mason Road. Look for congestion going on there. Eastbound 40 at Spady and Brentwood. There's also slow traffic going on. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street onto the PSB. Look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is slow from the Illinois Bank into Laclede's Landing. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge is slow from Monsanto all the way to the top of that ramp. Y down at South Hanley, there's a disabled truck. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. Holiday shopping got you crazed? Subway Restaurants can help with a Subway Cash Card. It's convenient and reloadable. Get one today. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thanksgiving. For today, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 50s this evening. Mostly clear, low in the mid-30s. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 60s. Wednesday evening, mostly clear with a low in the upper 30s. Then on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, mostly sunny skies with a high in the lower 60s. Currently, we have clear skies, 36 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting clear skies and 34. Stay tuned now for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today. We're hoping to see her first thing in the morning at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. But until then, we'll bring you more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, talk to my sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, talk to my sister.
Time for us to use our power. Please do not beg, hope for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Liz Brown is out ill today, so we're bringing you the best of the wake-up call. Stick around for traffic and weather at the bottom of the hour, but up next, it's more of the best of the wake-up call with award-winning Liz Brown. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Tonight,
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. We've been talking a lot about what is going on in the war in Iraq. And one of the discussions that is not held often enough is the discussion about what happens when our soldiers come home. What is the cost, the human cost, of this war? I reported on this show last week about something that is just heartbreaking and telling. The news report that came out of an international paper, that we are starting to see something in America already, and that something are our homeless Iraqi vets. We are starting to see our soldiers coming home. The survival rate is extraordinary, but they are suffering from wounds that we as a nation have never had to deal with before. And the question, of course, is, are we prepared for the extraordinary amounts of wounded soldiers coming back? Clearly, we're not prepared for our soldiers coming back if our soldiers are already on the streets homeless in a war that is not 4 years old. We need to talk about the human cost of this war in Iraq. And to facilitate that discussion, I have with me this morning Patricia Folkrot, the producer of the documentary The Ground Truth, joining us from New York, New York. Patricia, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
You have made a documentary called The Ground Truth, The Human Cost of War. Talk to us about what propelled you. What is this documentary about, and what propelled you to make it?
I was given a newsletter from Jim Hightower about a year ago, and he talked then, over a year ago, about the lack of proper body armor, that the flak jackets were old and from Vietnam, that the Humvees didn't have proper armor, that guys didn't have water. And it was like 2 in the morning, and I was outraged. So I started Googling U.S. soldiers wounded in Iraq, and I discovered with very little effort that even as early as a year ago, there were over 13,000 or 14,000 people who had been medically air-vac'd out of Iraq, yet the number in the news was at that time barely, you know, a little bit over 1,000, 2,000. So I just started, you know, looking at what was the issue, and I thought, if I were wounded in Iraq or Afghanistan and I was referred to as a non-combat injury, how would that make me feel? And who are these people that are being medically air-vac'd who are called non-combat? They don't get Purple Hearts. They slip back into the country or to Germany. And so I started making a film about them and about soldiers like Robert who come back with injuries that will alter their lives forever and then just sort of slip back in without any fanfare and are expected to go on.
Non-combat injuries? Is that, how can that be?
Well,
what is a non-combat injury?
Well, I think the bigger question is not only what is it, but how come we don't talk about it? A non-combat injury means you wake up in your bed in Iraq and you have some sort of weird respiratory illness and you have to be medically air-vac'd. You're in a Humvee and you're in an accident, as is one of the characters, one of the soldiers in my film, Denver Jones. You're in a Humvee accident and your spine is shattered and you're now on disability for life. A non-combat injury is anybody who is not blown up or shot at and lives. If you're not directly in the line of fire, you are non-combat injury. Those are
if
the majority.
If your Humvee blows up while you're in it, in Iraq.
Then you're an injury. I'm saying if there are many, many people who go to war get hurt. They're doing a mission. They're running around the streets of Iraq. They fall. They break an arm. They break a leg. They shatter their knee. They weren't necessarily shot at or blown up by the enemy, but they have sustained an injury.
Is this a new term? Is this a term that is exclusive to this particular war that we're fighting? Or is
No, I think we also I'm not an expert on this, but I think this is an old tradition. It's the same tradition that doesn't tell you how many really have died. If you're on a plane coming back from Iraq and you die from your injuries within a day or two, you are not counted as one of the dead. If you commit suicide, you are not counted as one of the dead.
So this is all part of a tradition of keeping from the public the real cost of war.
Yeah, it's to keep the numbers down. And it is a very recognized form of counting. And one of the goals of my film is to really ask the American public to step up. I mean, if you're going to send people off to any country, you have to step up and own it. You have to say, okay, my taxes are paying for these guys to go kill other people, and when they come back or when they die, here are the proper numbers, and here's the money that is needed to take care of people that I'm paying to go off and do that. And we don't do that.
So when we hear reports of monies that are being directed to the VA to deal with the injuries that come out of Iraq and Afghanistan and other places, are those monies that are directed towards non-combat injuries or the injuries, if you're going to send money, you're going to send money based upon numbers. Which numbers are is the money directed to the VA for? The numbers for non-combat or for the other injuries?
Well, they're for all of the injuries, but it's just like any other bureaucracy. One guy sitting next to you will be well taken care of. He'll get a certain amount of benefits. A medical board will review his injuries, and he will get a certain amount of compensation. Another guy sitting next to you will have post-traumatic stress or will have injuries that are not so obvious, and the military will say, nah, we don't think you got that at the war. We're not sure if that's for real. And you may get a different evaluation.
Does the determination of your injury as a non-combat injury determine the type of care that you're going to get?
I think it's the type of injury. You know, again, I'm not a military expert, but in the year that I've been interviewing soldiers, what's very clear to me, and there was a New Yorker article that talked about this, it's like this invisible Oz. It's like this man behind the curtain who determines whether you get 20% or 30%. If you talk to any soldier, they talk in percentages. They live to know once they're injured, you know, what's going to happen to them. And many of these guys want to stay in the military. They've signed up for a career. This is their job. And then the military says, well, we can't use you anymore. So we're going to medically retire you out, or we're going to send you out of the military because you clearly can't serve. You've lost an eye, or you've lost an arm, or you've lost this. And, you know, you'll just have to figure out something else to do. Or they offer you training. But the bottom line is you could go around about the numbers and the benefits forever. We focus on that. We don't focus on the effects of what these guys are doing. What is their job? Their job is to go to war. If you and I walked out into the street and saw somebody blown up, we would remember that incident for the rest of our lives. How it affected us would be different, but we would remember it forever. And we don't treat people like they will have lifelong memories or lifelong effects of being in battle and seeing people killed. And the idea that you could send someone to war without the proper armor and say, well, we're trying. Well, they're on the assembly line. Well, we don't have enough vests, but they'll figure it out. You know, you and I wouldn't go into combat for 2 hours without the proper care. We wouldn't walk out of the house without a coat.
Well, Donald Rumsfeld doesn't go to Iraq without the correct armor on.
No, and the thing is, you know, there are very few people in Congress, but we treat people, because we fight on foreign land, we treat people like they're this
this weird group of people that we put bumper stickers and ribbons around our trees for. But we're not really, if we get honest, we're not interested in the very murky injuries, mental, physical, and spiritual, I believe, that you come back with.
Let's talk about Denver Jones.
Yes.
Tell us about him.
Denver comes from a long family of military people. He lives in North Carolina. His grandfather served for Lincoln. His father was in the military. He was in the National Guard. He was deployed to the first Gulf War, and I think he was somewhere else. He served like, 8 or 10 years on and off in the National Guard. He signed up again after 9/11. He really felt it was his duty. He went over to Iraq. One of the things that's happening that people don't understand with the National Guard is you train with one unit in North Carolina, and then either just before you're deployed or when you arrive in Iraq, you're reassigned to another unit. This is happening consistently.
And what is the problem with that?
Well, I don't know why they do it. I wouldn't pretend to know, but I think it has to do with assigning. You're a mechanic. You go with those guys. Oh, you know how to fix planes. Oh, you're an artillery. They just divvy you up. But the whole tenet of one of the tenets of being in the military and being able to sustain what you have to do is that you're doing it for the guy next to you. Well, if you suddenly don't know the guy next to you and you don't know the unit, then the whole nature of being there and the camaraderie and the buddy system is not only diluted, it's non-existent. So Denver is one of those people who was assigned to a unit. I think he was mixed in with other active duty, career Army people. I think he felt a little bit treated like a second-class citizen. And so he was not with anybody that he knew. And he was in a Humvee accident. The guy driving was driving too fast. He was a young kid. They hit a hole. He hit the top of the roof of the Humvee, came down, and shattered his spine on the seat. He has a disability. His wife either has just had or is about to have their third child. She's had to work through the entire pregnancy. And he's fighting to get, I think, around $1,300 a month. And that's for the next 5 years. And then they will reevaluate, and they'll either take some away or they could add some. And I saw these papers. And he put in a claim for...
Wait a minute. I'm sorry, Patricia. I have to slow you down just for a second here. This man's spine was shattered.
Right.
In Iraq, fighting for his country. He is disabled for life.
Right.
He had to fight 12 months to get a lousy $1,300 a month. And that's not for the rest of his life?
Oh, no. And that's... No, it has to be reevaluated, and that's he put down. I saw his evaluation. He has post-traumatic stress. He has nightmares.
On top of his spinal injury, he has
post-traumatic stress, as many people do. He called me one day and said he woke up the night before in the shower, and he didn't know how he got there.
Jesus.
He just came out of a nightmare, and he was in the shower. He had no recollection of how he got there. I've spoken to him some days where while he was waiting for this evaluation, where I felt clinically depressed. And on his evaluation, they said that he did not suffer from post-traumatic stress because he wasn't far enough over the border into Iraq. Which makes up,
Now we can determine how psychologically you're going to be affected by geography?
Well, they call back the commander. I think in some cases what they do is they go back to the commanding officer and say, do you remember so-and-so? Did he see combat? Does it make sense that he would have this kind of stress? And somebody evaluates, whether they think it's warranted. I mean, you have to remember post-traumatic stress. It equals money. If you have post-traumatic stress, who knows how long you'll have it for. And if you're diagnosed as such, you're talking about money. It's all about
money that
how much you're willing to pay.
The money the military would have to pay you.
Yeah. And then what happens is you go into the VA system, and the VA tends to pay a little better.
And we have to take a break here, Patricia. I'm talking to Patricia Falkrod, the producer of the documentary The Ground Truth, joining us from New York. We also have with us Robert Acosta, U.S. Army Specialist, joining us from New York, and we'll be talking to him when we get back. This is about The Ground Truth, The Human Cost of War. Stay with us, folks. This is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. Don't forget, we are broadcasting.
You're listening to the best of The Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll have more of the best of The Wake Up Call following this traffic and weather update and these local commercials. And then we'll have more in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, this is AM 920 WGNU. St. Louis, 28 minutes after the hour, 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. Eastbound 40 at 141, there's an accident on the right shoulder and traffic is back up through Timberlake Manor. Eastbound 40 at Chesterfield Parkway, there's an accident on the right shoulder and traffic is back up through Clarkson and Olive. In both directions, 170 at Del Mar and Page, there's road construction going on, reducing it to two lanes, and southbound traffic is slowing near Page. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and Mid Rivers Mall, look for that traffic to be easing. Northbound 270 is slowing on either side of 44. Eastbound 40 at 141 and Mason Road, you expect delays there. Eastbound 40 from Spady through Brentwood, look for delays there as well. Westbound 40 from Big Bend through Hanley, you've got slow traffic. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street, or Route 3 into the Poplar Street Bridge. Still have slight delays going on. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank through Laclede's Landing is look like it's cleared up. Northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge, no delays on that ramp. And westbound Eastbridge traffic is moving well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. Holiday shopping got you crazed? Subway restaurants can help with the Subway Cash Card. It's convenient and reloadable. Get one today. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thanksgiving Day. Mostly sunny day, high in the upper 50s this evening. Mostly clear with a low in the mid-30s. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 60s. Wednesday evening, mostly clear with a low in the upper 30s. Then on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, mostly sunny. The expected high is 60 degrees. Currently, we have clear skies for the most part, a few clouds, and 36 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 34. If you're heading out to the bus stop, bundle up. It's a little chilly out there. It looks nice, but it is chilly. That is a look at this hour's traffic and weather. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. More of the best of Liz Brown coming up next. Liz Brown is out ill. We're hoping she'll be back in the studio tomorrow. But until then, we have more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@WGNU.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
Ayo, caller, away!
Folks, that's the Sloan Ranger. Catch him weekdays at 5 p.m. here on WGNU.
Seasons may come and go, but my allergies are here to stay. That's why I'm Claritin Clear. Claritin relieves my outdoor allergies, and I discovered it relieves my indoor allergies too. Whether it's dust, mold, or even my dog Rex. Claritin clears the way, relieving my worst indoor allergy symptoms. Only non-drowsy Claritin is proven to make me alert and focused so I can think more clearly. Because when I'm alert, I'm at my best. 24-hour non-drowsy Claritin. Live Claritin Clear, indoors and out.
Usage directed. Only brand clinically tested.
Let's talk turkey.
Want a juicy, tender, golden brown, picture-perfect turkey this Thanksgiving? Put your turkey breast up on a flat rack in a shallow oven pan about 2 to 2.5 inches deep. Brush the turkey skin with oil to prevent it from drying. This will also enhance the end color. Place the turkey in a preheated oven. The temperature should be 325 degrees Fahrenheit.
Keep listening for more Let's Talk Turkey, and have a great Thanksgiving.
This tip sponsored by Carteret Mortgage Corporation. For all your mortgage needs, call Tracy at 314-482-3570. Carteret Mortgage Corporation.
Hello, St. Louis. This is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson.
We're your hosts for The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m.
That's right. Tune in and you'll hear thought-provoking conversations and maybe something that'll make you mad.
Yeah, thought-provoking if they're listening to me. They'll get mad if they're listening to you.
Just the same, we'll see you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
4 to 5 p.m.
The Real Deal with George and Seal.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Now we take you back to more of the best of the Wake Up Call. Liz Brown is out ill. We'll have more of the best of the Wake Up Call in the 9 o'clock hour, too, after the local news and weather and traffic. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. I am talking to Patricia Folkrod, the producer of the documentary The Ground Truth, The Human Cost of War. She's joining us from New York. And also, I have with us Robert Acosta, U.S. Army Specialist, also joining us from New York. And I want you all to listen. And by the way, welcome back, Patricia. Before we get to Robert, I want to share a bit of a soundbite. And Patricia, perhaps you can tell us what this is. Howard, go ahead and play that.
I was called to serve in Iraq because the government said there were weapons of mass destruction, but they weren't there. They said Iraq had something to do with 9/11, but the connection wasn't there. They told us that we'd win the war and be home soon, but we're still there. So when people ask me where my arm went, I try to find the words, but they're not there.
Patricia, what was this?
That's actually not from my film. That's from a 30-second spot that Operation Truth made before the election with Robert Acosta, who's on the line with you.
Right. Let me get to Robert. Robert, good morning.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm outstanding, Robert. Why did you make that spot?
I felt it was important for people to realize what was going on. Paul Rieckhoff, the founder of Operation Truth, approached me with it. And we talked about it, and it sounded really good, and I said, yeah, I'll do it, definitely.
So now you're part of this documentary, The Ground Truth. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Robert. How you went to, you joined the Army at 18?
Yes, I did, yeah. I'm from Orange County, California. I wasn't the best kid in the world, so... going through high school, I really had no goals and anything, and then the military kind of came along. And it was, I don't know, I guess what I wanted to do at the time. And then I signed up before September 11th, and I was in boot camp when all that happened. And then I kind of figured from there I was going to war sooner or later. And then I was stationed out in Germany. From Germany, I deployed to Iraq in April 2003. And I was at Baghdad International Airport with the 1st Armored Division. And on July 13, 2003, we went out to go pick up things for soldiers, such as like ice, sodas, things like that. And a grenade was thrown into my vehicle. And I grabbed it, tried to throw it back out, but went off in my hand. And I lost my right hand and a couple pieces of my left leg.
And after this injury happened, you spent how much time recuperating?
I spent about 7 months at Walter Reed, but the recovery went on after that. Still, I mean, I'm still learning how to walk and trying to walk without a limp. And so, I mean, it's still there. I'm still learning new things, how to do work with my prosthesis.
How old are you, Robert?
I'm 21.
You're 21. How has the military treated you after your injury?
At first, the first couple of months when I was at, I was at Longstool and then Walter Reed, the nursing staff and the doctors at Walter Reed were really great, just really good people. But once you get into, like, medical hold.
What is medical hold?
Medical holding company is at Walter Reed. That's where you go when you're not really in the hospital, in a bed in the hospital. You're an outpatient at a hotel, which is right next to the hospital. That's when you go into medical holding company, and they want you to, you know, check in every day. And it was just a big mess.
Why was it a mess, Robert?
Well, I had my leg. I was on crutches. I was actually still in a wheelchair at that time when I had just got to the Malone House, which is right next to Walter Reed, where the outpatients stay. And, you know, it started snowing about that time, and it was cold outside, and it really hurt for me to go outside so early in the morning, but they wanted me to attend formations in the morning, and I told them, no, I'm not going to do it. So I was pretty much AWOL for about 6 days, and then I told them, look, I'll call in the morning, but I can't go outside. It's too cold.
And so what happened?
I was AWOL for 6 days. They said, if I do that again, then they'll take my rank away. And at that time, I didn't care. I was like, do what you want. I don't care. I just want to go home. And so we kind of, like, made the decision that I would call every morning just to let them know where I'm at. I mean, I'm not going anywhere. I'm on the verge of losing my leg, and I got one hand, and I'm in a wheelchair. I don't think I'm going to go very far.
And so they allowed you to call in, and after you were there, what happened? Where did you go from there?
From Walter Reed?
Yes.
I went home back to Orange County, California, and I transferred my medical all to the VA. And, I mean, the people at the VA are really nice. It's just they kind of weren't expecting such, like, I guess, fresh wounds. I was the first soldier from Iraq. Be at the VA hospital in Long Beach.
So by being part of the VA, that means that you are no longer part of the military?
Yeah, I was retired from the military as of January of this year, 2004.
Now, was it your desire to, if you could, stay with the military? Did you want to do that?
At first, I did. I really, really enjoyed the military. I loved it so much.
What did you love about it, Robert?
Just I had so many friends. I liked what I did. I was an ammunition specialist, but I mean, I knew my job so well. My parents were proud of me. All my buddies, I loved them to death. I mean, like, it was just a good time. Like, I was out in Germany for about a year, and that was the best year I've spent, like, my whole life. It was great.
So you get back home, you're in the VA hospital, and we need to hold that thought because we have to take a break. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Robert Acosta, U.S. Army Specialist, part of a documentary, The Ground Truth, The Human Cost of War, a documentary by Patricia Folkrod. She's also on the line with us from New York. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. We'll be back to talk to you more. Stay with us.
Listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll have more following these commercials and the top of the hour news.
WGNU Global News Update. The Baker-Hamilton Iraq Study Group is expected to suggest the Bush administration approach Syria and Iran about a regional approach to the escalating sectarian violence in Iraq. But Iran's president has now announced his own summit with Syria and Iraq to discuss the violence that some fear could threaten to send Iraqi refugees into both countries if conditions worsen. A sign that regional involvement may occur came yesterday when Syria announced it was restoring full diplomatic ties with the new Iraqi government for the first time in more than 25 years. Dayline Gaza. Israeli troops supported by tanks have reportedly pushed deep into Gaza in raids on two separate fronts. Local residents told reporters that a column of about 30 Israeli tanks pushed deep into Gaza City, where clashes were underway with Palestinian gunmen. An Israeli military spokesman would only confirm there were operations underway. There have been no reports of casualties. The separate smaller assault force moved into northern Gaza, where Israeli troops have repeatedly ventured to hunt the source of rockets that have been launched into Israel. This is your WGNU Global News Update, sponsored by Reasonable Construction.
Stop putting it off. Reasonable Construction has reasonable pricing to get the work done now. Reasonable Construction can perform all your rehab, repair, and remodeling projects for commercial and residential. 314-382-2200. Reasonable Construction has in-house payments and home improvement loans. They accept all major credit cards. Call today for your free estimate. 314-382-2200. For more information, go to their website, www.reasonableconstruction.com.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
The St. Louis Art Museum presents the annual After Thanksgiving concert by the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra on Friday at 7 p.m. Join us to hear the performance by premier musicians from the orchestra. Admission is $5 to $10 per person. Find out more by calling 314-721-0072. News for the holiday weekend from Radio Free St. Louis.
Hi, this is Ellen. I'm with the Citizens Commission on Human Rights of St. Louis, and I invite you to tune in every Saturday evening at 9 p.m. for the Electric Shock Radio Hour. This program is dedicated to investigations and exposure of psychiatric abuses of human rights. Tune in and find out what's happening in our society and what you can do to help. That's the Electric Shock Radio Hour, 9 p.m. Saturday nights, here on WGNU.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
And Liz Brown is out ill today. She will be back hopefully tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call. But up next, we've got more of the best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for another segment of the best of the Wake-Up Call following the 9 o'clock news, weather, and traffic. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Was humbly born in a stable of wood, and the friendly beasts around him stood. Jesus, our brother, kind and good.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to Patricia Folkrod, the producer of the documentary The Ground Truth, joining us from New York, and Robert Acosta, U.S. Army Specialist, joining us also from New York. Robert, on our way out, you were talking about what it was like when you got back home at the VA hospital.
Another thing about the VA is how the prosthetics department was not prepared also. There's another buddy of mine, lost his leg up at the hip. He said he had trouble with his prosthesis at the VA because they just weren't prepared, I guess. They just weren't ready. And in me, I think I'm the only upper extremity amputee. So
when you say they're not prepared, they're not ready, they're not prepared or ready to do what?
Well, see, at Walter Reed, if we needed something done on our prosthetics, it would be done in, you know, a day, in hours. But at the VA, it takes months, literally months, to get something fixed on a hand that I use from day to day, you know.
So have there been other soldiers that have come back to the VA that where you're being treated?
I think there's two more that I know about, that are really injured. These guys are amputees, also like myself, but I think there's a couple of guys that have PTSD, but I haven't met them or seen them or anything.
Robert, now that that's your home, and now that you've lost your hand, you've had your leg shattered and almost lost your leg as well, thinking back on your decision to join the military and thinking back on your decision to go to Iraq, was it worth it?
Not necessarily worth it, but I mean, I have no regrets. It's made me a totally different person. You know, I think differently. I just have a different outlook on life. Everything. Yeah, I mean, it's made me a totally different person. It's changed me, and I think for the better. I mean, it sucks I lost my hand and I can't walk right now, but I mean, I think I'm a lot smarter, a lot wiser, you know.
Would you like to continue to have a career with the military? Would you like that to have happened?
Before the injury, yeah, but now, no. that's something that was on my mind when I was in the military. Now that I'm out, you know, I kind of realize there's other things out there for me to do.
Back to you, Patricia. How many soldiers did you talk to as part of your documentary?
Well, I'm still making a documentary. In fact, if you go to...
Okay, we're really having a bad connection with you, Patricia. We're going to let you go and have you call us back or have our engineer get back in touch with you because we have a really bad connection.
Okay, can you hear me now?
It's really bad. It's a really poor connection. So we're going to let you go, and Howard will take care of that. And Robert, you're still on the line with
yeah.
us. How did you come to be part of this documentary?
Let me see. I heard Patricia talking on the radio back home in California, and I got her number, and I called her up. And I left this big message telling her who I was, and I wanted to get involved in any way that I could.
Why did you want to get involved? What was it about the making of this documentary, The Ground Truth, The Human Cost of War, that made you want to be part of it?
Because it's the cost of war, exactly. I mean, people don't really, I think, realize, well, especially in Orange County, they don't really realize what's going on, that there's people really getting hurt. Like, I found that people are so surprised that, you know, me, some guy from Orange County, I'm 21, I don't look very old, but when they ask me and they tell me, were you in the war? And I, you know, they're kind of like so, like, amazed by it, and it's just...
Because you're so young.
Yeah, and I think people should really know what's going on, who's going to war, and it's if they don't have somebody, like a family member, a friend, or somebody they really don't know about what's going on over there.
When you consider this war, let me get Patricia back. Patricia, you're back.
Yes, I'm back.
Much better, much better. Let me get back to you for a second. The people, the number of people that you talked to for the documentary.
I've spoken to over probably 100 soldiers. That's not how many are in the film, but the film that I've done so far of The Ground Truth is a half-hour version. Operation Truth and I are in the process of raising money to finish it as a feature film, which can then be in the movie theaters by this spring.
So it's still an ongoing project. It's not a done deal. And if you go to optruth.org or thegroundtruth.org, you can see more about the film. But I think it's sort of like it's the classic thing where people are incredulous to hear that soldiers aren't being taken care of because they assume that they will be. So I think it's really important to not focus on the details, but to focus on the overall picture, which is that we are not prepared to take care of these men and women when they come home. It's bottom line.
When you talk, Robert. When you talk to your friends, are you hearing that? Are you hearing that your friends are experiencing the same? Fellow soldiers are experiencing the same thing.
Yeah, I have. It's my unit. All my friends are in Germany and everything, so it's hard to keep in contact with them. But I mean, for the most part, yeah, definitely.
And Patricia, people, we have about 3 minutes here. Where can people go? Again, give out your website one more time for folks so that they can go and get part of this.
Sure. It's Operation Truth, and the website is www.optruth.org or thegroundtruth.org. They're both .org, and they're both two websites that the purpose of Operation Truth is to give soldiers a voice. If you're still active duty, if you're still in the National Guard, it's very difficult for you to speak out publicly about any issues you might have. So it's just difficult.
And we only have about a minute here. I want to ask you this, Patricia. I know that you have seen many amazing things. I know that you've discovered many amazing things. If you could, what was the most amazing thing that you discovered in the making of this documentary?
What I found is that the patriotism and loyalty that these men and women have to this country is awesome, and it's mind-boggling. And to betray that by not making a firm commitment of how responsible we are to these men and women, I think is a kind of betrayal that pushes people over the edge. You come back, you're sick, you're weak, you're tired, you've been in combat, and there is help, but it's not enough. I mean, it's very insidious. You can't say that the VA or the military doesn't help people, because they do, but they don't have enough funds. So I think we need to consider what is our commitment before we send them in the first place. And if we did that up front, they wouldn't have to struggle so hard when they come home.
And Robert, this will be the last word. If you were talking to a group of high school students, 17-year-old, 18-year-olds, and they were asking you about whether or not they should join the military at this point in time when we're still engaged in this war in Iraq, what would your advice to them be?
I'd pretty much tell them, look, I'm not going to think for you, but you know, I'll tell them my personal opinions on the war, and I'll tell them, look at me. Look, I was in your position. I wanted to go to the military. I ended up in Iraq, and now I'm missing my right hand. I don't sleep at night, and I walk with a limp. So, I mean, the most I could do is tell somebody my experiences and let them make their own decisions.
Patricia Folkrod, producer of the documentary The Ground Truth, and Robert Acosta, U.S. Army Specialist, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call.
Thanks for having us.
Happy holidays.
Take care.
All right. Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I'll be back after the news. Stay with us.
Revolution in the air.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown is out today. She will be in hopefully tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. for live in the studio Wake Up Call. But until then, we're going to bring you more of the best of the Wake Up Call following the ABC and local news. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather, and then more of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Revolution! Revolution!
will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
This is AM 920, WGNU, Radio Free St. Louis. Remember to listen to us on the World Wide Web at WGNU.net.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920, WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. How will the new cars, trucks, and SUVs hold up in that kind of a situation? The Institute for Highway Safety has ranked the best ones that will withstand crashes. Each one has an electronic stability control device. More from ABC's Lisa Stark.
Stability control helped minivans from Hyundai and Kia top their category, a big win for the less expensive Korean brands. Other winners, the Audi A6 and A4, Saab 9-3 and the Subaru Legacy, and seven SUVs, two luxury models and an Acura, two Hondas, and two Subarus.
And not one on the list was American-made. They are all imports. A Lebanese government official is dead. Industry Minister Pierre Jamel was assassinated.
Gunmen opened fire on Jamal's convoy as it drove in a Christian neighborhood in Beirut. Jamal is a member of an anti-Syrian Lebanese Christian faction. Lebanon's Prime Minister Rafik Hariri was killed in a 2005 truck bombing, apparently by Syrian agents. This assassination also comes as ethnic tensions in Lebanon are rising. The Shiite group Hezbollah has been demanding veto power in the government and threatening mass street protests if it's denied.
ABC's Matt Gutman in Jerusalem. If you have a young daughter, she probably plays with Polly Pockets. Now the toys maker Mattel is recalling over 4 million of them. The Consumer Product Safety Commission's Nancy Nord says the problem is the tiny magnets the toy contains that could easily fall off. At least 3 kids have been injured. And you thought what Michael Richards did as Kramer was on the edge? The comedian and actor is now apologizing for going on an emotional and at times obscene tirade while doing stand-up at a club in Hollywood. He says he became enraged when 2 men in the audience heckled him. The men were black. Richards used the N-word several times. ABC News Money Scope. The Dow is up 2 points in early going, and the Nasdaq is down just over 1 point. This is ABC News.
It's Sam's Club's Day After Thanksgiving event, where we're bringing in the finest of premium and designer brands. So to drive the point home, we've also brought in a fancy pants British announcer.
At Sam's Club's Day After Thanksgiving event, you'll find everything from cashmere blazers and Burberry fragrance to diamond stud earrings and HDTVs, all at Sam's Club's brilliant low prices.
Yeah, we don't really say brilliant here.
But what about lovely? Lovely low prices?
No, that sounds very British.
But I am British.
And we're not.
Oh, that's rubbish.
Visit Sam's Club, Friday, November 24th. Doors open at 5 a.m. Complimentary breakfast included. Join today to avoid the 10% service fee that applies to non-member purchases.
I'm cruising in my ride line, 16 stretches. You gotta get my floss on, watch out.
Life may never be clean, but with Hoover, your floors can be. Hoover Floormate cleans all your hard floors. Hoover Wind Tunnel 2 Upright vacuums your carpets. Buy them together and get up to a $100 mail-in rebate. So use Hoover and keep it clean. Offer varies. See Hoover.com and participating dealers for details. Expires 1707.
Well, this could be a very big night for a lot of people in the music business. ABC's Dave Alpert with a preview of tonight's American Music Awards.
Jimmy Kimmel hosts the AMA's live telecast, and he's hoping for a train wreck.
A couple years ago when I hosted, Anna Nicole Smith had her famous flip out on the air, and that was just all I could possibly ask for. I tried to get them to invite her again, or somebody with a problem.
Black Eyed Peas have a leading 3 nominations. So do Red Hot Chili Peppers, Mariah Carey, and Nickelback.
Look at this photograph.
The American Music Awards air tonight on ABC TV. Dave Alpert, ABC News, Los Angeles.
So are you ready for tomorrow's big getaway? Millions of you will be getting on a plane headed somewhere for your Thanksgiving destination. Prevention Magazine says if you're going to be flying, you should skip the airplane food. Bring healthy stuff with you instead. And once you get through security, buy a bottle of water and make sure you drink it. Daria Alvinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, the community of Marissa is shocked by yesterday's train accident that killed 3 people. 43-year-old Tina Porter, her daughter 13-year-old Alyssa Porter, and 13-year-old Donna Calvert were killed yesterday when Porter's SUV was struck by an oncoming train at a crossing on Main Street. Another girl was hospitalized in critical condition. Cindy Grau, the owner of a restaurant near the scene of the crash, says she's never heard of anything like this happening in Marissa before. Belleville Police Chief Dave Rubhausen is officially out of a job. The Belleville City Council voted to fire the chief last night. Mayor Mark Eckert says the firing has nothing to do with the November 10th shootout that critically injured Sergeant John Bruff. Eckert says Rubhausen often didn't report to work until late in the morning and didn't communicate with his command officers. Finally this hour, a nationally recognized kickboxing instructor wants to knock out hunger on Thanksgiving. Charlie Foxman will be holding a charity kickboxing class tomorrow morning from 9:30 until 11.
That's the whole idea, was that we can all help others by raising some money for Operation Food Search while we also burn some calories so we can enjoy Thanksgiving.
The event is at Midwest Martial Arts Academy, located near I-270 in Olive. Participants are asked to arrive at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning and bring a minimum $10 donation. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. Holiday shopping got you crazed? Subway Restaurants can help with the Subway Cash Card. It's convenient and reloadable. Get one today. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Centrum Silver. In both directions, 44 at Shrewsbury River to Pear. Look for road construction to reduce the three lanes. Eastbound traffic is slowing near Lindbergh this hour. River to Pear is closed at Watson and Gravoy due to bridge replacement. Detours are in place. In both directions, 170 at Delmar and Page. You can expect the roadway to reduce the two lanes, so expect some delays there. Olive between 170, look for road construction. The left lane's closed. Route 67 is restricted to one lane in each direction over to Missouri River, for bridge repairs. Page just east of 170 at Page Bridge, look for restricted to one lane as they're doing some replacement operations. Shodo will be occasionally having daytime closures between Vandeventer and Spring as crews work to replace the bridges and the roadway. And there are a number of other roadway projects going on at this hour. Just a reminder to slow down through those work zones and give yourself a little bit of extra time and use caution around construction workers who are working out on the roadways. That is a look at this hour's traffic. The only other concern will be that remaining pushing into downtown at this hour. Other than that, this hour's traffic has been sponsored by Centrum Silver. Centrum Silver Multivitamins is age-adjusted. It helps protect your health as you age with key antioxidants that will help natural cell repair. Centrum Silver, take along with a healthy diet and exercise. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. For today, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the mid-30s. Moving on to Wednesday, mostly sunny, high is expected around 60. For Wednesday evening, mostly clear once again with a high or low in the upper 30s. Then on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, mostly sunny during the day, a high is expected in the lower 60s. Currently, we have mostly sunny skies, and our current temperature is 36 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting sunny skies and 35. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today. We hope to have her back in the studio first thing tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., but until then, we bring you more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease,
that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
This is the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today. She should be back tomorrow morning beginning at 6 a.m. But until then, enjoy another installment of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want to toll-free long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Any kind of, every kind, all kinds of ways get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. We have talked about on this show many times the challenges that people face in attempting to get through the justice system, the so-called justice system. We had a guest on earlier this week, an attorney, to talk about the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay and what they are facing, and the fact that they are not told what charges have been brought against them, the fact that they cannot see their attorneys, the fact that even if they present evidence of their innocence, Guantanamo Bay can keep them there for the rest of their lives. So I guess it really should come as no surprise to us, since we United States citizens paid for and created a Guantanamo Bay. It should come as no surprise that the folks that created Guantanamo Bay now are trying to deal with and prove the innocence of a 39-year-old African woman who is on death row after being convicted based upon and convicted of a triple murder based upon evidence from a laboratory that has been found to have people working there that people that haven't even had failed the basic mathematical requirements that you need to work in a crime lab. They failed algebra and geometry, and some of them never even took statistics, and yet they're drawing conclusions about statistical results based upon DNA. We need to talk about Frances Newton, and to have that conversation, to facilitate that conversation, we have joining us from Washington, D.C., Wendy Patton, the U.S. Advocacy Director from Human Rights Watch. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Very good. And we also have Steve Hall, Director from the Stand Down Texas Project, joining us from Austin, Texas. Steve, good morning. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
Fine.
Steve, I'd like to talk to you, start with you first. Stand Down Texas Project, what is that?
The Stand Down Texas Project was organized to advocate a moratorium on executions in Texas. A state-sponsored study commission, such as we saw in Illinois, and certain other reforms. We believe that our criminal justice system is broken in Texas. The Newton case is an excellent example. And the real problem that we have in Texas, Texas executes people like no other state.
Absolutely.
We have carried out 336 executions since resumption of the death penalty, far more than any other state. In fact, we've carried out over one-third of all the executions in this country, many of those proceeding in spite of intense controversy, lingering questions, including questions of actual, factual innocence, as you have in Francis Newton's case.
So let's talk about the Francis Newton case. Wendy Patton, can you talk to us about who is Francis Newton?
Francis Newton is a woman who, as you mentioned, a 39-year-old woman who was sentenced to death for three 1987 murders. She is an African-American woman. Her execution had been scheduled for December 1st. What's most striking about Ms. Newton's case is that there are very real claims of innocence. This is a woman who, from the beginning, maintained her innocence. She received ineffective assistance of counsel. There were no witnesses presented in her defense at her trial. Her case rests largely on ballistics evidence that was conducted in the now widely discredited Houston crime lab. And without that ballistic evidence, it is unlikely that Ms. Newton would have been convicted of these murders. What she and her lawyers had done was to ask the Texas Board of Pardon and Paroles and the governor of Texas to grant her a 120-day stay of execution so that her lawyers might be able to conduct a thorough investigation of the case, including new ballistics testing in a reliable lab. And just before her execution, that stay was recommended by the Board of Pardon and Paroles and granted by the governor, which is a relatively unusual move in Texas.
Absolutely unusual in Texas. Wendy, let's talk about, so that people can really feel what Francis Newton has gone through, let's talk a little bit about her ineffective assistance of counsel. How bad was it?
There were, as I mentioned, her attorney failed to present any witnesses in her defense. And from Ms. Newton's own statements and testimony, it appears that that attorney really failed to conduct any investigation on her behalf.
Did she testify?
You know, I'm actually not sure. I don't know if Steve, you know that.
I'm not sure. Her attorney, Ron Mock, had a history of being notoriously ineffective.
And, before we get to that, Stephen, one of the things I think people need to understand is that every state is not equal in terms of how poor people are represented. Here in the state of Missouri, we have the public defender's office, and the public defenders are paid fairly well. They have a lot of resources. They have investigators. They have the ability to go out and investigate these cases. In the state of Texas, do you have a public defender system? And if not, how are attorneys selected to represent people who cannot afford to represent themselves?
Only very recently have we seen some public defender offices in several counties. By and large...
But in 1987...
That's correct. There were no public defender offices in Texas at that time. By and large, and certainly even today, the bulk of indigent defendants are represented by court-appointed attorneys. And at that time, the state of Texas was in an absolute crisis state over this type of court-appointed representation. The state, the individual counties controlled the process. It was different courtroom to courtroom within a county. Very low caps on investigative cost, attorney cost, any sort of resources. And
in some cases, I've read that the attorneys and the investigators were being paid minimum wages. When you figured it all out, it came down to minimum wages that these court-appointed attorneys were receiving to represent these indigent clients.
Sometimes even less, Liz, because they were often capped at a specific dollar amount. sometimes as low as $500.
Wow. So we have Frances Newton, part of a system where she cannot receive, even if her attorney was trying as hard as they could, she couldn't have received very good legal representation with caps like that and with reimbursements like that.
That's just out of the gate.
She couldn't have received very good representation.
That's correct, and this didn't disappoint. The attorney who was appointed in her case, Ron Mock, had a notorious history of being ineffective as a defense counsel. You may be aware, Liz, of the case of Gary Graham, a young African-American male who was accused of a murder in Houston years ago, always maintained his innocence. Ron Mock did an ineffective job in his case. As a result, his claims of innocence were never heard by a court of law. The crime scene witnesses who did not identify him and who, in fact, said, "That's not the guy," were never heard in a court of law. And in the summer of 2000, Gary Graham was executed by the state of Texas. And that's the same attorney who represented Frances Newton and failed to represent her effectively.
How much of the incompetence of this attorney factored into the decision-making for the 120-day stay?
I think that that played a significant role. The fact that this case has some unique aspects to it can't be overlooked. It is a woman. Women are relatively rare on death rows across the country. The specific facts of this crime, which really do not mesh with this individual.
And we need to tell folks what the specifics of this crime. It's not that these were just three people that were murdered. This was her family.
That's correct. It was her husband and two children, and these were very much execution-style shootings. Three bullets, killing three people very quickly, and moving out of a crime scene. This is not the type of crime that you would normally associate with family members. It's not the type of crime that you would associate with any kind of emotional state. This was a very cold execution of a husband, of a man, and two young children.
It was professional.
Yes.
So we had this professional killing. We had this attorney that did not present any evidence. We had an attorney who's notorious for his incompetence. And let's talk about the crime. It's like crime led. It's like almost everything wrong came together on this one particular case.
That's exactly right, and I think that's what makes it so particularly egregious. As I said, it seems that much of the case against Frances Newton rests largely on the ballistics evidence testing that was conducted in this crime lab in Houston. And the problems that have been revealed in the crime lab range from missing evidence. There were hundreds of missing boxes that were found in early 2003 in the lab that pertained to 8,000 criminal cases.
Wow.
The Houston Police Department is still reviewing the evidence uncovered in these boxes. There was also an independent audit that revealed very alarming defects in the crime lab's DNA analysis. And there have also been cases of inaccurate ballistics evidence. And so for all of those reasons, there have been several prominent individuals in the criminal justice system in the Houston area, ranging from Houston's chief of police to a criminal appeals court judge, who have called on the state to delay all executions in Harris County in the greater Houston area until all of the evidence contained in the missing boxes can be reviewed and the problems at the crime lab can be addressed.
So how many cases has that involved? Has that happened?
There are a number of cases that are being challenged, as one can imagine, convictions where evidence was tested in the lab. Already one case has been overturned based on the prosecution's use of incorrect DNA evidence. There are other cases where the ballistics evidence is being challenged, so there are appeals and investigations going on. But I think it was particularly striking that that was an aspect of Ms. Newton's request for a stay, and surely something that factored into the decision to stay her execution.
Well, given the fact that Texas doesn't have a really effective public defender system, and given the fact that Texas has such a dismal history of paying attorneys what they need to fairly and competently represent their clients, and given the fact that there are, as you say, 5,000 cases that appear to be affected by this lab, who's going to be making the claims for these people? Will these people have to go pro bono? Will these people have a pro se? Who's going to be representing these people and their claims of wrongful convictions?
Well, that's one of the continuing scandals of this Houston Police Department crime lab that has now been running for 2 years. The district attorney's office has thus far really blocked any independent examination of the problem. I'm not sure that anyone even knows the names of the cases that the district attorney's office said should be retested, and a number of those have been retested, and a significant number of those, in addition to the actual exonerations, a significant number of those, the retests have come back with inconsistent results. And again,
well, where does that information go? If it comes back to the prosecutor's office with inconsistent results, who gets that information besides the prosecutor?
Largely, it is a matter of the district attorney's office making those decisions.
Well, that's not right.
That's right, and that's why many people have called for an independent investigation.
And we have to take a break, folks. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. I am talking to Wendy Patton, U.S. Advocacy Director from Human Rights Watch, joining us from Washington, D.C. And I'm talking to Steve Hall, Director from the Stand Down Texas Project, joining us from Austin, Texas. We are talking about the pending execution of Frances Newton, a 39-year-old woman of African descent who was convicted largely on the basis of evidence conducted by the widely discredited Harris County Crime Lab in Houston. We'll be talking more about this when we come back. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill. She should be back in the studio at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. But until then, more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920. WGNU.
Suffered roof damage from the recent severe weather, Phil Person Roofing is still a name you can trust. Licensed and certified for commercial and residential jobs, Phil Person Roofing offers free estimates for all work. To contact Person Roofing, call this special emergency number, 602-1047. That's 602-1047. Phil Person Roofing, 602-1047.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your health care needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Let's talk turkey.
Always use an oven-safe meat thermometer and insert it in the thigh, but not touching the bone prior to placing your turkey into the oven. And leave it in while the turkey is roasting. Position the thermometer so it can be read while the turkey is in the oven.
Keep listening for more Let's Talk Turkey, and have a great Thanksgiving.
This tip sponsored by Carteret Mortgage Corporation. For all your mortgage needs, call Tracy at 314-482-3570. Carteret Mortgage Corporation.
Hello, St. Louis. This is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson.
We're your hosts for The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m.
That's right. Tune in and you'll hear thought-provoking conversations and maybe something that'll make you mad.
Yeah, thought-provoking if they're listening to me. They'll get mad if they're listening to you.
Just the same, we'll see you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
4 to 5 p.m.
The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Liz Brown is out ill today, but she will be back in the studio hopefully tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, enjoy more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up, you need to get to me. I am talking to Wendy Patton, U.S. Advocacy Director from Human Rights Watch, joining us from Washington, D.C., and Steve Hall, Director from the Stand Down Texas Project, and joining us from Austin, Texas, and we're talking about the pending execution of Francis Newton. Wendy, where are we with the execution of Francis?
She has been granted a 120-day stay. I think one of the interesting aspects of this case is that it was not, as we often see in death penalty cases, a request for clemency to commute her sentence from death to life without parole. Because of the very real claims of innocence involved in this case and the problems with the evidence testing in the crime lab, what her lawyers asked for was a 120-day stay so that they would have more time to do a more thorough investigation of the evidence. That stay was recommended by a 5-1 vote in the Texas Board of Pardon and Paroles, and then the Texas governor granted that reprieve. That reprieve was granted on December 1st.
December 1st, this December?
Yes.
So we have 120 days from December 1st for her attorneys to do what they need to do. What do her attorneys expect to be able to show after this 120-day period?
Well, I know one of the keys to this is to be able to re-examine the ballistics evidence in the case by doing the testing in a reliable lab. That's certainly going to be a key part of it. But they would plan also to investigate other aspects of the case and then be able to present that evidence again.
Now, will they be presenting additional evidence of her the ineffective assistance of counsel, or is this directly or exclusively about the crime lab? Steve or Wendy?
Well, I can't speak for David Dow, who is Francis Newton's attorney. He's the director of the Texas Innocence Network at the University of Houston Law Center. I believe that the main thrust of their investigation will be, as Wendy said, retesting some of the evidence and looking at the witnesses who were never called, witnesses who could help establish a timeline of this crime.
And in terms of the your advocacy about the death penalty, Steve, is there any chance that the rate of the executions in Texas will begin to slow as a result of what has been exposed with this crime lab?
Well, that's a great question because, in fact, what we've seen is a gradual decline in the number of executions, even in Texas. We've also seen that nationally. Nationally, we've also seen a decline in the number of death sentences imposed by juries. And in part, that is because of the problems that we're seeing with these cases. Nationwide, we've seen over 115 exonerations, men and women released from death row, cleared because of actual innocence. We've seen other problems with the system that we now have a greater awareness of, all the way from police investigative procedures all the way through the clemency process. So all of this is leading to a very real crisis in public confidence.
In fact, all across the country, we've had just the reduction of even the states pursuing the death penalty.
Oh,
that's
correct.
Right. One of the issues, I know that people in Missouri have been looking at it, Kansas and other states, is the simple cost of the death penalty. What many people don't realize is that it's far more expensive to try a capital case with the appeals, with some of the costs associated with the unique nature of a death penalty trial, far more expensive to do that than to incarcerate someone for life in prison without parole.
And Wendy, the fact that you alluded to this a little bit earlier, the fact that Frances Newton is a woman, that impacts on the decision, doesn't it?
I think it's certainly part of the overall feel of the case. Women have constituted only a tiny percentage of those who've been executed in the United States. And I think it plays into the broader trend that Steve mentioned. You know, now as we approach the end of the year 2004, we have the new statistics on death sentences. And as Steve said, we've seen a reduction. It's actually quite dramatic over the past 5 years, where it's really a drop by half in the number of death sentences that are being handed out. In 1999, there were 282 death sentences in the United States, but in 2004, we're on track to have 130. It's less than 50% as many, and I think it really does reflect, in large part, the lack of confidence and the discomfort that on the part of both the broad public and officials have with the fairness of the way the death penalty system is applied. Steve had mentioned earlier the Illinois study, which folks may be aware of. This is an exhaustive, bipartisan, two-year study by a commission in Illinois that in 2002 released a report that detailed the kinds of problems that plague the capital punishment system. And what's striking is that this study was initiated in Illinois after the Illinois death penalty statistics were such that the state had executed 12 people who were on death row. At the same time, it had released 13 people as innocent.
That's exactly right. And now to the human face of Frances Newton. This crime was committed in 1987. That means that Frances Newton has been on death row for almost 20 years. My first question is what is this a reflection of, the fact that she has been on death row for 20 years? And secondly, have either one of you talked to her, and how is she, what does she feel about the fact that her death sentence has been stayed for 120 days, and her death sentence has been stayed for 120 days?
Well, I think one way to look at it, Liz, is that she's lucky to have been on death row for 20 years, and that's the unfortunate truth.
That's an outrageous statement. It truly is an outrageous statement.
Unfortunately, cases that have come along after hers because of changes in state law and changes in federal law have proceeded much more quickly. Just 2 months ago, Ernest Willis was released from Texas death row, exonerated and released after spending 17 years on death row. Now, unfortunately, had his case come along several years later, after these changes in law.
The fast tracking, basically.
That's right. I suspect he would have already been executed, and Francis Newton might well be in that same position.
Have either one of you talked to Francis?
No, I have not.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us here on the Wake Up Call to bring us this information about Francis Newton. Are there any websites that we can visit to find out more?
Liz, I think one thing, if you go to Houston Chronicle, which is chron.com, there's an excellent resource of coverage on the Houston Police Department Crime Lab. You can also find articles on Francis's case.
And Wendy?
I think that's really important for people to read about the specifics of the crime lab in Texas, so I would second what Steve said, to look there. And then obviously there are a range of groups which cover the specifics in Texas and nationally that people can look to and check out their website.
Wendy Patton, Steve Hall, thank you very much for joining us here on the Wake Up Call, and happy holidays to you.
Liz, thank you.
My pleasure. Listen, folks, we're going to take a break. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. When I come back, I'll be taking some of your calls and comments, so get to us at 454-0400.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. We'll have more coming up next following these messages. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Construction has reasonable pricing to get the work done now. Reasonable Construction can perform all your rehab, repair, and remodeling projects for commercial and residential. 314-382-2200. Reasonable Construction has in-house payments and home improvement loans. They accept all major credit cards. Call today for your free estimate. 314-382-2200. For more information, go to their website, www.reasonableconstruction.com.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal, work, or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Everything's coming up roses.
Hey, everybody. I'm Scott Cooper. I want to invite you to tune in to my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. right here on WGNU. Join me as I take you on a journey inside the incredible world of flowers. I'll entice you with ideas from weddings to home entertaining and so very much more. I'm all about flowers and a whole lot of fun. Please join me Tuesdays at 10 a.m. as we stop and smell the flowers right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Liz Brown is off today. We're going to hopefully see her tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, we're going to play a couple of selections from the 920 Club to get you to the 10 o'clock hour, where it will be Floral Design Inside and Out coming up next. This is the AM 920 WGNU.
I remember you.
you're the one who made my dreams come true. A few kisses ago.
Tears into the stream, said. Lord is loved you, come rain or come shine. High as a mountain and deep as a river, come rain or come shine. I guess when you met me, it was just one of those things. But don't ever bet me, 'cause I'm gonna be true if you let me. You're gonna love me like nobody's loved me, come rain or come shine. Happy together, unhappy together, won't that be fine? Days may be cloudy or sunny, we're in or we're out of the money, but I'm with you always, I'm with you rain or shine. I'm gonna love you like nobody's loved you, come rain or come shine. High as a mountain and deep as a river, come rain or come shine. Days may be cloudy or sunny, we are in or we are out of the money, but I'm with you always, I'm with you rain or shine.
Liz Brown is out of the studio. She will be in hopefully tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, enjoy more of programming from AM 920 WGNU.
Revolution in the air, air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Saying that progress is being made. If you take a knife and knife back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel me, brother.
The truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.